It's time for Twit This Week in Tech. Great panel for you. Wesley Faulkner's here. Will Harris from the UK. Chris Primesberger from ZD. And lots to talk about. Apple's surprising announcement. They're going to let you repair your own iPhone. Do you want to? We'll also talk about the debris cloud that almost clobbered the International Space Station. And goodbye, Staples Center. Hello, Crypto.com Arena. Plus, did you hear the one about the Bitcoin bros who wanted to buy the Constitution? It's all coming up next on Twit.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 850, recorded Sunday, November 21st, 2021. Leo, not Leopoldo. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Noom. You don't need rules to lose weight, just the knowledge and wisdom to empower you to build smarter, more sustainable habits. That's what I did. Start building better habits. For healthier long-term results, sign up for your trial at Noom.com/twit. And by Privacy.com. Privacy lets you buy things online using virtual cards instead of having to use your real ones, protecting your financial identity on the internet. Right now, new customers will automatically get $5 to spend on their first purchase when you go to Privacy.com/twit to sign up now. And by Podium. Join more than 100,000 businesses that already use Podium to streamline their customer interactions. Get started for free at podium.com/twit or sign up for a paid Podium account and get a free credit card reader. Restrictions apply. And by stamps.com. Save time and money this holiday season with stamps.com. Sign up with the promo code TWIT for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, free postage, and a digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to stamps.com, click the microphone at the top of the page, and enter the code TWIT. It's time for Twit This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news with some of the most interesting people in tech. It's great to see old friend Will Harris here, all the way from London, jolly old London, England. Hello, Will.
It is great to be here again, Leo. How have you been keeping?
I've been doing great. We haven't seen you in ages. Will, when was the first time you were on Twit? It must have been more than a decade.
First time I was on Twit was going to be, I'm going to say it was 2003.
Holy cow. Can't be that long ago. Really?
I think I was, no, maybe not quite that long ago. I wasn't far out of college. I mean, it was we were within the first 100 episodes of Twit.
How many companies ago was it? That might be easier for you.
Yeah, a few different companies, a couple of different startups and many, many late nights slaving over documents.
So last time you were here, you were telling us about your company Entail, which you had just started, Entale.com, which is a really cool idea to enrich podcast content. And I understand,
because very cool podcast company.
I see the lower third has changed, that you have been acquired.
Yes. So we, DMG Media, which owns a lot of great titles, including, as you might see on the lower third, The New Scientist, acquired the company. And actually, as part of what we've been working on for the last few months, we've just revamped the New Scientist podcast. So go and check out the new Scientist weekly podcast, which is a fantastic listen.
I'm a big fan.
If you like this show. Yeah.
Yeah. We talk about New Scientist's articles all the time. So that's great. News.
I mean, I'm definitely not an on-air talent for that one.
Well, I was going to ask you about the latest research on quantum computing, but okay, we'll save that.
Yeah, no, sadly, pass me over for the quantum computing bet.
Rats, because there's no one I can ask about this. And I see that nuclear fusion's back in the news. We'll get to that in a bit.
Oh, it's big, baby.
It's huge. It's huge. It's going to be a life changer. Also with us, Wesley Faulkner, who has the same job two shows in a row, head of community. No, thrilled to have you, as always, head of community at Single Store, singlestore.com. Good to see. How's things going?
Thanks. It's a challenging week, so that almost didn't happen. So I'm glad we were able to get a streak of two.
How close are you to Kenosha?
4 hours.
Okay. That's far enough away. You probably didn't hear the screams of rage.
But this, Does something happen there?
Nothing. Zero.
Oh, okay.
Zero. We're not going to talk about it. That's all I have to say.
Yeah. Actually,
did you get a new hairdo? Am I wrong?
Okay. So I had dreads. I shaved off a year ago. And then I had a closer shave. And then my partner said that it was too short. It was uncomfortably short. And so I'm growing it back out.
Are you going to have a fro? Are you going to have a full fro?
I love the idea of uncomfortably short, Wesley. Like, uncomfortable for who?
Look at this guy with his uncomfortably short British hair.
Apparently, I have a misshapen skull. So it's too short.
Oh. I would love to be able to have more hair. Honestly, I'm holding on to what I've got for dear life.
Lisa, I shaved my head, as you may remember, for UNICEF some years ago. And Lisa said, you may never do that again. I, too, have an oddly shaped skull.
Yes,
so
I'm under the same contract.
Actually, I think it looks good. But, I mean, how big are you going to go? I mean, are you going to go? You could.
We'll see. Only time will tell.
That's awesome. That's awesome. It looks good now. This is a good length, I think. Yeah. Not that it's.
Thank you. Also, I have conditioner in it, so it's nice and shiny.
Yeah, it's good. No, I don't know why I'm talking about hair. I'm so embarrassed. Let's move on. We also have a brand new but very welcome contributor on the show. He's kind of legendary. Chris Breimsberger is here.
Legendary?
Well, editor emeritus at eWeek. How long were you at eWeek?
Well, 05 to 21, so 16 years, do the math.
That's a long time.
And by the way, I've never shaved my head, by the way. I never will. So good. I just want to let you know.
Good. I do not recommend it. It was cold. It was cold.
I bet.
Contributing writer and editor at ZDNet. He is also, I've just learned, one of the voices of Stanford football, and he's a little groggy after the big game last night.
Yeah, well, fortunately, the game was at 4, but I didn't get home until 9 or 10, I guess it was, and then I had to get up early this morning. But, no, I've worked in the Stanford press box for over 4 decades. Oh, boy, that's a long time.
They call it the big game.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the axe was handed over, I believe.
Stanford was axed. Night, 41-11. Ooh, was not good. Oh. But you know, for Stanford fans, Cal fans, it was a joy. In fact, I think there were more Cal fans at the game last night than Stanford fans.
Really?
It looked like it. Yeah. Wow. By the colors. Yep.
Those guys in blue and gold are very loud as well.
Yes, they are very loud. It was fun. But I came to Northern California in 79 as an assistant sports information director at Stanford.
Oh, really?
And
oh,
wow. So that was the job that brought me up from L.A. where I was a sports writer. So I've connected with Stanford ever since, and it's been fun because, I enjoy going to the games and getting to know the players and the coaches. So it's
ironic because I've always thought that tech news and tech coverage is very similar to sports in that you're covering something that people care passionately about that probably, there's no deaths, there's no helicopter crashes. It's kind of the toy store, but so it's fun to cover. Mm-hmm. But then the irony of it is that people who are into tech care very little usually about sport ball. And I imagine it goes the other way as well.
Well, there's also a huge amount of like partisanship and team-based cheering, right? Yeah. You're either Team Apple or Team
That's
Google
right.
and screw those other guys.
That's right.
You know.
You got that
I think
right.
we have a story about a new Coliseum that has a new name that may put a little kink in your theory.
No
there.
Kidding.
Oh, that combines the two, of course.
They renamed Staples Center, which has been the Staples Center as long as it's been around. It's a beautiful facility.
1999.
And it's where the Clippers play and the Lakers play. And it's kind of famous because it's a big TV market. Everybody knows.
And the Hockey Kings, too.
The Kings, the Staples Center. Mm-hmm. It is now the Crypto.com Arena. What the hell?
It seems kind of appropriate. So the media has taken to shortening it and calling it the Crypt because that's when the season looks like it's going to be going.
That was a natural.
Talk about an unintended consequence.
Buried very badly.
Oh, ow.
That was a natural. That was going to happen no matter what.
So the Crypto.com, I guess, is one of the crypto companies that is doing quite well. Honestly, they're all blended together to me.
Yeah, that cost $700 million for 20 years.
Did they pay in Bitcoin? Because it's not so much.
Maybe.
Bitcoin hit 70,000 a couple of weeks ago. Maybe they just gave them 1,000 Bitcoin and call it a day.
Could've maybe they been. Just put up their domain name for auction because that'll probably fetch that much.
Did you? Okay. Speaking of Bitcoin, the Bitcoin bros tried to buy the U.S. Constitution, but failed. That's a link baity kind of a headline, isn't it? Turns out
it's kind of accurate there, right?
Well, turns out that there are 13 copies, printed copies of the U.S. Constitution, not handwritten, but printed copies of the Constitution. And Sotheby's auctioned one of them off yesterday. And seeing that this was coming, bunch of crypto investors put together a DAO, which stands for, this is a acronym for something that's equally meaningless, a decentralized autonomous organization. And the DAO raised $40 million in crypto, $40 million in crypto.
Wow.
More than 2,000 people contributed an average of $200 each, $40 million. But it turned out not to be enough. They were going to buy the Constitution. I don't know what they were going to do, tear it up into 2,000 pieces. I had no idea. How would you get, what would you get?
So I think the idea was, Leo, they were going to donate it to a museum but on the condition that it was displayed with an explanation of what a DAO was.
Oh, Lord.
And why it was going to be sort of like the future of currency. And the interesting wrinkle in this in the story is not only did they get outbid for it by $6 or $7 million, but it is estimated that as much possibly as $15 million of the $40 million that was raised went on Ethereum gas fees. And so actually they would have needed to raise more like 60 to actually bid the 50 that it would have cost them to get it. And so it's the great irony of like, this is the future of, you know, the future of money. But unfortunately it cost us sort of 15 million to raise 40. That still wasn't enough.
So they were, I said Bitcoin. They were raising Ethereum.
It was Ethereum. Yeah.
Here's the sad. So and by the way, it was of course a hedge fund billionaire that outbid them. Who else? Mm-hmm. This is. It feels like
that's a huge story. You're kind of like skipping over the whole backstory here.
Oh please.
The front person for this DAO was the same guy who was doing the meme stocks of.
It's Mr.
For
like, Diamond Hands himself.
GameStop and AMC and running those up. And he put together the DAO, and the person that actually bought the Constitution was the person who advised Robinhood about cutting off, limiting the amount of trades on those stocks.
He's the CEO of Citadel, which was the hedge fund that gave Robinhood a bunch of money.
Exactly. So like it was almost like a revenge play. Like, oh, you're
doing it's the ultimate revenge on the GameStop.
He didn't even want the Constitution. He doesn't care about the Constitution. He wanted to stick it to Mr. Stonk.
Yes. Yes.
Oh.
So this is a mini series waiting for Netflix to buy it. It's just an amazing story.
So this got very personal very fast.
Clearly.
So
yeah.
Wow. Wow.
He knew who he was bidding against, obviously, and bid it up. And he was going to beat him no matter what, obviously.
No matter what.
He's the fourth wealthiest hedge fund manager with a net worth of $16 billion. So he's got...
It's also very apropos about how billionaires are buying democracy. I mean, it's just...
Yeah, there's a little kind of...
It's perfect.
It's kind of the... Wah, wah, on the Constitution.
It's one of those things where subtext becomes just text.
It's a little too obvious for HBO. I think they're going to have to modify. ConstitutionDAO.com. We did not win the bid for the copy of the U.S. Constitution. While this wasn't the outcome we hoped for, we still made history tonight. The largest crowdfund for a physical object that we are aware of. Yeah. $40 million minus gas fees. I didn't realize gas fees were that high on Ethereum. That's...
Yeah, there should be a Venn diagram of like car drivers on one side and then NFT traders on the other in the middle says the gas is
paying. Gas fee. That's who made money on this.
I mean, also, it's generally not a good idea to go into an auction announcing what your maximum bid is.
Yeah.
Like everyone knew they'd raise like 40 million. Yeah. It's like, well, then I'll just bid 40 and a half and you're away.
In a way, it just shows how dumb Ken Griffin was because he bid 43.2 million. He should have just 40 and a penny. He could have won. Maybe somebody else got involved. I don't know. I got the numbers wrong. They said 17,437 donors. Median donation, $206. Well, Ethereum equivalent. Mm-hmm. You will get a refund of your pro rata amount, effectively minus gas fees, through Juice Box, they said. So if there you go. There have been other DAOs, right? This is not a new con. This is not the first time we've seen a DAO.
No, and there's a lot of excitement in the investor community about the fact that the DAOs might really do something to break up the sort of hold on the hold ons of the startup industry that venture capitalists have, because if you can make it easy enough to effectively crowdfund money, but with a specific purpose, so the people that are putting in the money know they're not going to get sort of screwed over later, and that you know, they kind of know what they're signing up for in advance, that it could actually Jason Calacanis has been talking a lot on Twitter about the fact that DAOs could be a real game changer for startups going forward.
So everybody caught on to NFTs, and so they had a new acronym just in case, waiting in the wings.
Yeah, I mean, let's not make things simple for everybody. I mean, one of the key things about the entire NFT and crypto space is the acronym of DYOR. For do your own research. And it's like, yes, because nothing says mainstream adoption like spend hours online researching
there's a lot of people claiming they're doing their own research and coming up with kind of kooky things. Yeah. So doing your own research
that's
on the
working
internet.
Out really well for the working out really well yeah. for vaccines, right?
Yeah, so, yeah. exactly. I did the research. And I think horse dewormer, that's the solution. So some are saying that actually...
So are we officially saying that DAOs are the horse dewormers?
They're the horse dewormer of cyber currencies, yes. I don't know. You could actually effectively say that Bitcoin itself was a DAO. DAOs, according to Wikipedia, are organizations represented by rules encoded as a transparent computer program. Blockchain, controlled by the organization members, Satoshi, and not influenced by a central government, right? Except El Salvador. Mm-hmm. So in a way, I guess Bitcoin is a DAO. So
it's a DAO is closer to like the co-op grocery store.
You
go there, you buy stuff, but you also are a member. And so when stuff comes up for bid, you have like, you can vote for it and saying we should adopt this rule or have your favorite soaps brought in, whatever. So it's kind of like that. You're part owner and operator. And if the venture itself is profitable, you get a little bit of a cut.
It's kind of easy, Chris, for us old timers to kind of mock the things these young people come up with.
But, no, absolutely.
So I want to recuse myself. I mean, maybe there could be some real interesting benefit to DAOs. I don't know. Just
give it some time. I remember Palo Alto had a co-op market for a long time. It was very popular, and I wonder how that worked.
Oh yeah, I used to be a member. You'd have to go and restock the bulk bins and put more vinegar in the giant vinegar tub and stuff like that, and you'd be part of the co-op. You put in some sweat equity, and then you could buy your old vegetables there. And that was back in the day, right?
Yeah, that was a while ago. Yeah. No more.
No more. Now we got DAOs. For instance, you can, and now if you really want to make things exciting, you can use a DAO to buy an NFT. Should we call it a NIFT? If I'm going to call it a DAO, I should call it a NIFT. In May 2021, Jenny DAO bought an original song from Steve Aoki as an NFT.
People are listening to this and like, what language are you speaking? This might hit the level of like record setting TLDRs, not TLDRs, three letter
TLAs. Three letter acronyms.
Boy, acronyms. I bust up acronyms when I'm writing. I explain them all the time because a lot of people don't understand them.
Yeah, but does it explain it if I say to you, oh, you mean a decentralized autonomous organization? What the hell does that mean?
Well,
it's at least two sentences every time you say DAO. It's at least two sentences, maybe three.
That's true. Yeah.
The we're using our made-up names now.
All right. And it's not the DAO that most people think of when you think of finance institutions. Not the DOW DAO.
Oh, not the DAO Jones.
You've got to immediately break that up as well.
Oh,
but I love the fact that just to be mischievous, because there's a, you know, obviously NFTs, you know, one of a kind on a blockchain, etc. Somebody made the a version of the Pirate Bay for NFTs this week, just basically right-clicking everybody's like really expensive Bored Ape profile pictures and uploading
them.
And
it's gigabytes, right?
Pirate Bay.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's it, you know, but that underscores the fact that when you buy an NFT, you're not taking something, you know, the Mona Lisa, putting it in a box. Digital copies of your NFT float around, perfect copies of it float around. You don't control that.
Yeah, you're buying the ownership. You're not buying the thing, which is sort of...
That's cyber zombie. I own that.
It sucks because you don't even have the rights to it as well. Because like when Jack put us his first tweet as an NFT,
right,
and he sold it,
yeah,
you can't say, okay, no one else can use this.
No,
or you got to give me a VIG. Like if I have my copyright because I own this, so now you have to pay me to quote this. You can't even do that. You can just say like, look at this tweet that everyone has seen everywhere.
So they actually call it the NFT Bay, which is hysterical. It's an Australian artist as well as programmer, and you can go there and download every NFT on the Ethereum blockchain with one click of the mouse. But be prepared, it's 15 terabytes.
Oh,
but
what?
Does it also find single housewives near me as I'm downloading?
It's BAY, not BAE. Just let you know.
Just if you love it, put a ring on it. That's all I'm saying. It's just the modern world. You get to a point in your life where you realize why your grandfather and your father and all these old folks were saying, get off of my lawn. That there just comes a time in your life where you go, you young people, stop playing that rock and roll so loud, you know, and cut your hair, Wesley, cut your hair.
Yeah, I just raised my hand and said, I'm done.
I'm over. I don't get it. I don't know. I don't understand. Anyway, welcome to the crypto.com arena in Los Angeles. I want to hear announcers explaining that when they do the Lakers games. We're here at the crypto. Do they say crypto.com or just crypto?
Probably crypto.
If I say crypto.com, I think you have to say the .com. That's the whole thing.
Yeah.
$700 million?
Yep. 20 years.
Holy moly.
Yeah, that's going to be around a while.
Do we still think crypto.com is going to be here in 20 years?
No, of course not.
But on the other hand, you know, we can mock it, but like the whole place was previously named after like a staple.
Staples is a store. Like, it was a store. It's an office supply.
But Staples is only named Staples because they sold staples, right? It's like the printer paper
arena.
That's
a good point. If you really think about it, it's not.
You know, it's not like exactly an iconic name.
Well, neither is
Petco. Petco arena, right?
Petco Park and Minute Maid Park in Houston is another one. Unbelievable. There's one in Atlanta. I think it's called Truist. I think their baseball park is called Truist.
Oh,
that's
boy.
A bank, but a lot of people don't realize what Truist, T-R-U-I-S-T, is.
Well,
wow. It should have been Gerber with all the dribbling. I mean, it would have been perfect.
SB Nation has a list of 13 dumb arena names inspired by the crypto.com arena.
And
I think it's just a matter of time before we have the TikTok arena, the Jake and Logan Paul Brothers Stadium, Instagram Influencer Dome.
Well, hey, we already have the Twit Brick House. So, I mean,
I might have started this trend. The Dogecoin Stadium, Q Stadium, the Mark Zuckerberg Sports Adjacent Metaverse Athletic Complex. The Turmeric Bone Broth Dome.
Oh, my God.
Elon Musk Dome. Okay, we'll stop there. I don't want to finish that list. But thank you, SB Nation, for letting me steal your Very fine humor. I didn't plan to start with that, but it's actually a great story. El Salvador is about to create a Bitcoin city. Of course, remember, El Salvador actually made Bitcoin their national currency a few months ago. Mm-hmm. They're issuing a tokenized bond developed by Blockstream to be processed by Bitfinex. $500 million of a planned $1 billion bond offering to buy more crypto in El Salvador. Bitcoin City will be located along the Gulf of Fonseca near a volcano. Why not? It's affordable.
Government, what could go wrong?
Okay, they actually plan on putting a power plant by the volcano to provide energy for the city and Bitcoin mining. So that's the idea, right? Free energy as the lava flows. Residential and commercial areas, restaurants, an airport, port and rail city. It will be laid out in a circle looking like a coin, which is ironic because there is, in fact, no coin in Bitcoin. And in the city center, there'll be a plaza that'll be host to a giant Bitcoin symbol. Mm-hmm. But you might want to move there because the city will have no income, no property, capital gains, or payroll taxes. Income, property, capital gains, or payroll taxes. No taxes. They didn't mention sales tax.
And how do they fix the roads, the circular roads?
There? Magical, yeah. Bitcoin.
Wait, oh, they'll make it up in volume. Got it.
Yeah. How can Bitcoin become a national currency? That's what I want to know.
The mayor of New York City has announced that he's going to take his first three paychecks in Bitcoin. But that's only because the mayor of Miami says we're going to have our own coin, Miami coin. And so the new mayor of New York says, well, we're going to have New York coin.
I thought cryptocurrencies are not supposed to be attached to any national currency.
Well, they can be, though. They can be.
But I suppose the point of it being decentralized is that you can do if you want to, because you're not changing the nature of the crypto. You're changing the nature of your own currency's relationship to it.
Okay.
You sound like you know about this stuff.
Well, I think we need. How have we not jumped on Twitcoin? that stuff writes itself. Mints
there
itself.
You go. That's perfect.
Mints itself. I like it.
Can I pay for my Twitcoin?
The coin is right behind you, Leo. It's right up there.
It's going to look exactly like this logo. Yeah, it's exactly it right there. That would be a pretty nice coin. It'd be pretty nice. I think you've got a brilliant idea. Let's take a little break. We're going to come back with more. We started with the silly stuff. But maybe we'll just keep on going. It's great to see you again, Will Harris. Still of Entail.com, but among other things, empowering the New Scientist's new podcasts at newscientist.com/podcasts. Wonderful to have you back.
Great to be here, Leah.
Also love having Wesley Faulkner on all the time. He's got his special single store mug. That's, by the way, what you just did, that's exactly what they do at the beginning of TV shows, where, you know, where they show the characters, they do something goofy, and then they laugh and smile silently. Perfect. Perfect. You can be in our new TV show. Thank you, Wesley.
And you called me talent.
He's talent. No scare quotes either. Just real talent. And Chris Primesberger is also here. I love the title, Editor Emeritus at eWeek. Can I ask a dumb question, though?
Dumb questions are accepted, sure.
Does eWeek still exist?
Yeah, it does. And it does. It's run by a company called Technology Advice in Nashville, a small kind of an upcoming marketing publication publisher. James McGuire is now the editor. So,
is there a paper? Because I used to get the paper eWeek.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah,
we stopped at, in 2011, and the reason I remember that is we cut the physical magazine publishing the month after Steve Jobs died, when I wrote his obit for the cover, and that's why I remember that. Wow. October of 2011. Yeah,
eWeek was one of a large category of magazines, including PC Week, that were gimmies. They were free if you could show that you were an influencer at a big company, like you bought technology, because it was full of ads for those technologies, and they were actually very good magazines. PC Week had Spencer the Cat, though, right?
Right. And he kind of also kind of bled over onto eWeek for a while. No, that's not a good image, but he did. He kind of overlapped E-Week also. So he, Spencer F. Cat. Remember, it's Spencer F. Cat.
F. Cat.
Yeah.
He was the whiskered wonder, the gossip columnist, and there was always a question of who Spencer F. Cat was. Mm-hmm. Do you know?
Well, I do, and I don't know if I guess I could probably tell
it's
a little bit
about it. It's
been
10 years. You can finally tell the story.
Spencer had several personal identities at E-Week.
He used to come to, I guess it was Comdex back in those days. There was a guy who would wear a Spencer Cat costume.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I should try to find a picture of Spencer so we can show him.
I'll find it for you. Go ahead. You keep telling me the story. So it was a rotating assignment, or just different people would take it?
I think different people would take it for a while, and then they'd
it's
say,
like
hey,
Robert
you
X.
Know.
Cringely was different people until it was finally one guy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I remember coming on, and I think Eric Lundquist was doing it for a while, and then John Pilato was doing it for a while, and I did it for a while.
I thought maybe you were a Spencer the Cat.
It was fun. It was kind of fun. I didn't do too many of them, but we did some.
Yeah. I had some suspicions. Here's a cartoon. Oh, he still has a he has a Twitter account.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he's still writing at E-Week, is he?
He's got I think he's on hiatus. And the last he was seen in the Caribbean on one of the islands there.
Yeah, yeah. He's in Barbados now. He hasn't tweeted for 4 years, so I think we can safely say he's passed on.
He may surprise somebody someday and come back. We'll
hysterical.
See.
Did you ever get to wear the cat costume?
No, I never did. Never did. That's a bucket list thing for me. Yeah.
Somebody's got it ratty, probably moldy in their basement somewhere. You don't throw that out.
Yeah, we'll have to ask around some of the old timers like John Dodge and some of the others. We'll find
somebody's
out.
Got it somewhere.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find. Let me search for Spencer F. Cat Comdex.
Oh, boy.
I danced with him at Comdex. Also, Bill Gates was at that. That was, a PC Mag party.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. You've learned more about Spencer F. Cat than you probably ever thought you wanted to know. Our show today brought to you by a brand new sponsor, but somebody I've known for a long time, Noom. I remember it was about almost a year ago, Lisa and I we'd been watching TV a lot during the lockdown. I had gained the famous COVID-19 pounds, and I said, Lisa, I think we should do Noom. And, you know, the thing is, I did it, got great results. I'm, in theory, still doing it. Lisa, you never stopped. My wife, Lisa, is our Noom model of the week. You look so good. Of course, I'm a little biased. How did Noom do for you?
Well, I wanted to make a lifestyle change in Q1. So I decided, you know, why not join Noom with you? It was kind of a joint effort at first.
Well, I think I did it first. And you, I think, said initially, I'm going to do it to support you.
I did, because I also, though, gained a little weight over COVID and also going through menopause, it started to fluctuate a lot more, and I really wasn't happy with that. So Noom had me at three things. One, it's an app. Two, if I heard easy one more time on TV, I was like, okay, I really have to try this. And the third thing that really grabbed me about Noom was that a candy maker was on it, and he was successful
on it. And he lost
weight.
Yeah.
And I have a sweet tooth. So they had me at those three things. And so I originally started Noom with you, and in 6 weeks, I got to my goal weight. And it was easy.
I did not.
But the easy part was so beyond easy that I can't tell you. It was just cake for me. And then 3 months after that, I went, you know what? I'm going to go down 5 more pounds. And I did. In July, I went down, and I've been rocking my new goal weight since. And I won't go without Noom. I mean, the articles are amazing. You get a group coach. You also have an individual coach. It teaches you not to be afraid of the scale. And here's the best news. Nothing's bad.
That's my favorite part.
That's my favorite part, too.
My coach, Coach Tia, I felt so guilty because I had a hot dog. And she and I said, Coach T, I'm sorry, I had a hot dog. She said, what's wrong with that? There are no bad foods. And it's not a diet. I think that's the first thing to understand.
No, it's just about changing your lifestyle and adopting the pieces and learning what foods are better for you and things along those lines. But as a woman and as an American woman, I want choices. And so nothing is off the table with Noom.
No.
They just teach you how to think about food, to be more mindful about what you're doing. And once you start actually applying a few of those practices to your daily life, it is the easiest thing I've ever adopted in a lifestyle change in 50 years.
Knowledge is power. And I think that's the thing for me that I love about Noom. It's an app. It's on your phone. You record what you eat. But more importantly, you get lessons. They are using something called cognitive behavioral therapy, which is a big phrase that really just describes education. Learning, instead of setting rules, don't do that. That's bad. That's good. They teach you a practical knowledge that lets you build, I think, a much more sustainable relationship with food so that you don't feel guilty, you don't feel bad, but you also understand when you're eating mindlessly, when you're, what is it, what do they call that? There's a phrase that they use when you just kind of,
well, like there's fog eating. They fog teach you eating. About all of the different types of ways that you're stuffing your face without thinking about it. And they're just making you more aware that you're putting food into your body. And they also teach you about processed foods and whole foods and what are better for you.
It literally changes your relationship with food.
It does.
And with eating. And I think that that's the thing that's lasting. And that's why it's not a diet. It's something that lasts your whole life.
Correct.
And you know better about what you're eating, but also you understand when you're fog eating or you're eating emotionally. It's really fun. It's very easy. The lessons are not long, no more than 15 minutes a day. They're fun. They're jazzy. And it really works. And I think just look at Lisa. Don't look at me. I'm the before. Lisa is the after. 75% of Noom users finish the program. More than 60% of users engaged with the program keep the weight off for a year or more. You're on what they call maintenance right now with Noom, and you've kept not only kept the weight off, but you're absolutely in control of what's going on. In fact, when we were in Mexico, you're logging what you're eating. I'm thinking, wow, I'm impressed.
Well, you can choose to keep logging or not, but I just have, and it just keeps me accountable and mindful to myself. And I don't think I will ever give this up because, like I said, it's easy and it works for me.
Yeah. It's the knowledge and wisdom that let you build a better, more sustainable relationship with eating and with your food, better habits. Noom Weight's cognitive behavioral approach helps you better understand your relationship with food, how to be more mindful. It gives you the knowledge, and there's lots of support, by the way, not only from your coach, but also from the group. There's great group support for a long-lasting change. I've done every diet in the book, and people, long-time listeners and viewers know I've talked about all the other things I've done. There's never been anything. It's one thing about a so-called diet is it's stressful. It makes you eat more. You know, you go off the diet and you chow down. This is not a diet. This is sustainable. With Noom, taking care of your health is empowering, not stress-inducing. There's no need to fear ruining the program with one off day. Everybody has off days. That's part of the program. Noom helps you get back on track. All you need is that daily 10-minute check-in. There's no grueling early mornings or huge chunks of the day where you can't eat. It's easy. I think that's the thing that really that is true. It's true for you, I think, right? You found it easy to do.
It was the easiest thing I've ever tried.
And it's I think, changing your life-changing. Start building better habits for healthier long-term results. You can sign up right now for a trial, Noom, Noom.com/twit. Here's two people who are doing it and love it, and it really does work. That's Noom.com/twit. Sign up for a trial. Lisa, thank you coming in on NFL Sunday. But your Niners won, so it was okay.
It's okay.
We made sure the Niners played early so you could do this.
Of course.
Thank you, Lisa. Noom. I'm a fan. We're all fans. Highly recommended if you've been thinking about it. Highly recommended. Back to the news of the week. Apple, you know, when Apple announced this on Wednesday morning, it was like news flash. Apple put out a press release saying, you can fix your own phone, and we're going to give you the parts and the repair manuals. This was like a complete reverse from Apple. Apple's been fighting right to repair legislation in states, many states, with lobbyists, with also any trick in the book. Apple has for a long time done things like brick your phone if you do your own repairs. Most recently, if you change the screen on your phone, Apple's Face ID just stopped working. Apple backed down on that. And then this is the ultimate. Or is it the ultimate back down, Wesley Faulkner? Apple tells you how to fix your phone.
My reaction immediately, like when I read this, is as it feels like they just created a whole nother economy. So this is going to be very transformative for some people, some groups. Just like the Freedom of Information Act didn't mean that everyone can, you legally could petition the government for information. There'd be a few people who are like, I'll go through this trouble. It'll be worth it for me to make sure that I can help me, my friends. And then, of course, word's going to travel to say like, hey, didn't you know Wesley can fix your thing? You only just need to toss him a couple bucks. Or he'll do it for free. He already has the equipment. You just need to pay for the parts. From that aspect of like empowering individuals and people to start companies to help with their own community with repairing these devices is going to be great. I remember Christina Warren, I think, mentioned that her screen broke. She was overseas. She had their screen replaced.
Yes.
And then she couldn't use her fingerprint reader because it wasn't considered an authorized repair.
Right.
And so that would be a case where like she can get empowered by someone else being able to get the authorized equipment. But also what this also does is makes every broken iPhone a source of money, because you can not only take something that's not working and then be able to upcycle it, have someone else use it, but Apple will buy back all the broken parts. And so you'll get store credit. And so this person who's doing all these repairs, they can charge for the replacement. But when they en masse take all these broken parts and send them to Apple, they get a credit, which means that they're actually be able to have some other value that they can bring back. It's like you can recycle cans, and then you see homeless people going through trash cans and trying to like take all the stuff out and being able to recycle it, because they're creating an economy for this thing that used to be a throwaway. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the thing that's really interesting about this program, even it's really exciting that Apple is deciding to sell this stuff to individuals and to businesses that can do this. I think the recycling bit is really interesting, because Apple has sold itself for a long time on the fact that so much of its supply chain is renewables, and I think the fact that if you've got a busted screen, you can send it back to Apple and get some store credit. I think one that speaks to a really interesting sort of ethical place that Apple is clearly wanting to say that they come from. I think, two, it goes beyond even what the sort of right to repair legislation that a lot of states are trying to enact. It goes even beyond that. So it makes them sort of quite difficult to criticize or legislate against. But also possibly, do we think that's a symptom of like just how bad the supply chain problems are, that like Apple is quite happy to have your old
go
stuff
ahead.
Back.
Go
like,
ahead.
Geez, we'll fix it. We can't get any more
get
screens
it.
from China, so we'll fix this one.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a symptom of them moving into more of a service economy, right? Like,
well,
they're
let's face it,
more devices, more services.
They were getting a lot of headwind from the EU and from Congress, and it may have been a defensive move because they felt like we better do
it
this.
Was. I think it was definitely a defensive move.
Yeah. Yes. It was definitely a defensive move. And I agree with both Will and Wesley about the new economy options here. I think there are going to be new businesses sprouting from this. However, I'm thinking of older users like myself. I took my iPhone 6 in. I wanted to get the battery replaced, and I didn't want them to do it because I didn't want to pay for them to do it. So I sent away for a kit to put the battery in. And when it came, I had real issues putting the battery in. Now I'm not a tech expert, but I should have been able to do that fairly easily. I couldn't do it. I eventually had to take it back to Apple and have them put the battery in. So when it comes to like a broken screen or something like that, there's no way. I think that what's going to happen is I think a lot of older users are going to just hire somebody young, you know, to fix it, you know, for them, and maybe to save some money from going to the shop itself. But I think they're right. I think we're going to see a lot of new jobs come up as a result of this.
The chat room is pointing out that this may, and it's not coincidental, this probably was due to a shareholder lawsuit. A shareholder group was suing it over right to repair, and the shareholder resolution actually came due on that Wednesday. The announcement follows months of growing pressure. This is from The Verge, from repair activists and regulators. Its timing seems deliberate, considering a shareholder resolution environmental advocates filed with the company in September, asking Apple to reevaluate its stance on independent repair. Wednesday was a key deadline in the fight over the resolution, with advocates poised to bring the issue to the Securities and Exchange Commission. So Apple forestalled that suit going to the SEC. Yes. Apple said, no, this has been in development for well over a year, which actually makes sense, because you don't roll this out in an instant. Nevertheless, the timing seems perhaps a little influenced by that shareholder lawsuit.
The announcement timing is very interesting.
Exactly right. Now, a lot of people, including Martin Pierce, writing in The Information, were skeptical. He calls it Apple's pointless self-repair program. He says it's hard to see this as anything other than theater. Apple's responding to pressure from the FTC. And since most people struggle even to put a screen protector onto their phone, it's hard to imagine many will feel comfortable unscrewing the back and replacing one of the 200 parts Apple will make available. But I think, Wesley, you made an excellent point. And this was the first thing that came to mind. It doesn't mean I'm going to make that repair. It means I could go to Apple, say, I have an iPhone 12, I need a new screen. I can buy that part from Apple. And then I could bring it to somebody, an independent repair store, or you, Wesley, and pay you to fix it, and then send the parts back to Apple for a credit. Mm-hmm. I think that is gonna expand the availability of repairs.
Yeah,
you can go to the kiosk in the mall.
Sorry, Wesley.
And I was just saying, you can go to the kiosk in the mall, which is probably like 5 feet from the entrance of the Apple store.
Yeah,
and probably get this done too. Go well. Sorry.
I think what's disappointing, though, probably the thing that is the most kind of is this is currently for iPhone 12 and 13.
Only the most recent.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
And of course, it's really the people with sixes that need repairs.
Yeah, that need
right.
repairs.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody's battery is dead on an iPhone 13 already. Right. So it's really, and there's no plans, as they currently have said, to start rolling this backwards. It seems like it's going to start from 12 and go forwards rather than allow you to go back to 11, X, 9, you know, which is not great.
They do say that they're going to do the same thing with Mac computers and the M1 chips. That's going to start early next year and continue in the U.S. and continue to additional countries throughout 2022, according to the press release. They've been so intractable on this. Any movement, I agree, it's not changing the world, but any movement in this direction is very positive, I think.
But also, it challenges all the other manufacturers to do the same now.
Yes.
Right? So
yes.
You get rid of a headphone jack and then everyone needs to get rid of it. So this
people do copy Apple. I also hope that it means that they will make phones that are more repairable. Because part of the problem is these are, you know, they actually have to make special machines that they send to the Apple stores so that they can get these things apart and put in new parts. The Apple stores have special equipment to do this in many cases.
And there's glue involved.
There's a lot of glue.
Too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I repaired iFixit, which is a former sponsor. I think let's say former sponsor, iFixit.com. And Kyle Wiens, their CEO and founder, been very, very big on right to repair. I had a Pixel 4. The battery swole up, popped the back off. I ordered a battery from them. I don't know if it was original equipment, but it was legit. I put it in. You know, I had to remove some glue strips. You're right. They send you it looks like a little muffler that you put in the microwave to heat it up, that you put on the back of it to melt the glue so you can take the thing off. But it worked. I was able to repair it. It was only $50, something like that. And it gave me a new phone for a while until like the Pixel 6 came out. So I like this idea, and I do think some phones are more repairable. I would love to see more screws on the back of phones. The Pixel, let me see if the Pixel 6. No, I don't see any screws. I think a lot of phones are glued together. So I think that's the next step, and I'd like to see that. Make these things more repairable. It's just the right thing. We don't want to see these things in the dump. We don't see them in the landfill.
Yep.
Okay.
That's right.
So I'm... I know it's, you know, it's kind of au courant to be skeptical of anything Apple does. And, you know, oh, you're just doing it because you have to or because of legislation or lawsuits. But I think they deserve a little pat on the back. I'll be the first to say, good, good. Now keep doing it. Now let's just fix this App Store thing and and you'll have something. All right, good. We've decided it's good. One thing not good, Activision Blizzard. They've been doing everything they can to live down their image as a stew of sexual harassment.
They could do more.
They could do more. And in fact,
it feels like they've got a long way to go before they've done everything to live it down.
In fact, 100 workers walked out this week at Activision Blizzard demanding the CEO step down. Of course, he is often... considered to be part of the reason they've had such problems. And now Microsoft has said, we're not going to do business with Activision Blizzard. And Sony indicates they might do the same thing with the PS5. That's when you start getting some pressure.
Well,
you can see by their response.
Go ahead.
Apparently Xbox is evaluating its relationship now. With
Microsoft's not going to... I don't know what it means. Are they going to not... You can't not have...
I think it's the equivalent of, you know, we need to have a talk. Relationship is like, you're not necessarily ending it, but you definitely need some changes. I mean, I think that just the most improbable, like, you could not punch yourself in the face harder element of this entire thing is that, you know, back in the summer when all this kicked off in the first place, Activision sort of committed to better equality, particularly in its Blizzard division, and appointed a man and a woman as co-CEOs of Blizzard. And then it turns out this week, paid the woman less for
exactly the same job. Oh my God.
And when she asked, and only, you know, this only came out when she asked for a pay rise, and they initially said, no, you can't have a pay rise to be on the equal pay of your co-CEO. And then she quit, and then they offered her equal pay. And it's like, oh, my word, when you've had a sort of, you know, sex discrimination scandal and you appoint CEOs, you know, a man and a woman, maybe consider paying them the same thing, because otherwise you really are face-planting from day one.
Yeah, and now we're back to Apple. Does the word tone-deaf mean anything here?
Yeah.
Let me think.
Yeah. Big expose in the Wall Street Journal. When you start seeing the articles in the Wall Street Journal, that's when you start getting serious. Stock price down 10% over the week. Xbox chief saying, you got some splaining to do. PlayStation, Sony saying, how do you plan to address the journal's reporting here? I think it's just a matter of time before Kotick steps down, Bobby Kotick, and... and they've got a new CEO in there. It just seems like this is, you've got to deal with this somehow. The company's board released. Go ahead.
I feel like they've got, you know, Kotick is the guy that delivered Activision out of the wilderness sort of 15, 20 years ago. The board is a lot of his handpicked people, and it's really hard, you know, to see them, you know, so far the shareholders that have, you know, been aggravating for Kotick to go are kind of less than 10% of the shareholding. And it's like, it kind of feels like unless Microsoft and Sony really demand something, they're just going to try and weather it.
Yeah.
They want the two board members, like two of the most, the longest serving board members to leave as well, not just the CEO.
Yeah. Don't expect any action from the board, in other words.
It's like Mark Zuckerberg's board.
Right.
They're not going to do anything.
The board did release a statement saying, quote, it remains committed to the goal of making Activision Blizzard the most welcoming and inclusive company in the industry. I'm sorry, it's hard not to laugh. And is confident in Bobby Kotick's...
I mean, literally, it is, right? It's a joke.
It's a joke.
It is a joke.
And they're confident in Kotick's leadership, commitment, and ability to achieve these goals someday down the road.
Okay. And it turns out that he had there was a statement by somebody. It was credited to somebody at Activision a couple of months ago. One of the senior female executives at Activision that Kotick came out and denounced at the time and said this was sort of not reflective of what we believed. And it turned out that he'd actually ghostwritten the memo. So he'd ghostwritten the memo, given it to this woman to publish, and then absolutely sort of distanced himself from it and said it was the wrong thing. So, I mean, it just keeps on getting worse and worse and worse.
Here's the story from 5 days ago in the Wall Street Journal. Activision CEO Bobby Kotick knew for years about sexual misconduct allegations, didn't inform the board of some reports, including alleged rapes. The company faces multiple regulatory investigations. It's just, it's sad because you know what? He did a good thing for Activision. And all he had to do was the right thing for women at Activision. And I guess couldn't do that. Is it the frat boy culture? I think these companies, think that we have to allow this or we're not going to have the programmers to do the games we need to do.
As a frat boy, I can tell you, I disagree with that strongly. But coming out of the pandemic, especially, it's not just money; it's morals. It's being able to say that I'm proud to work here and my job takes care of me. That's very important nowadays. And this, when I said like it sounds like Apple again about equal pay, is because that we have a story about how there was a movement there and then how that went terribly wrong for the people who are just speaking up. But it was so. Like, this is so strong, like, to make sure that your employer knows that it's made up of employees who are humans. And yeah. You should treat humans with compassion. And I want to also say I commend Microsoft for being able to take a big hit when they're already the number two and consoles, but knowing that Activision and Call of Duty is like very highly aligned,
yeah,
and that they're willing to take like a hit to injure themselves to do something that is right, I think speaks volumes, and also speaks to the Microsoft employees who are probably speaking up and saying, we need to do something about this. And I think that is the underlying tone. Companies need to take care of their people.
That is a trend in general. It certainly started in the tech community where employees were so important, the engineers were so important that they could actually stand up and say, we don't want you to do defense work, or we want you to treat females or black people with better. And that has now spread to, I think, the entire workforce. And it's interesting to see workers feel more empowered all of a sudden, as they should be. And you know,
didn't Google start that a few years ago?
It certainly happened at Google. It did. And by the way, Google's still not off the hook for firing a number of people for being activists. Mm-hmm. They still have acted badly, and they've never really paid the price. They paid off the creator of Android. What was it? He got $90 million after being forced out of the company for sexual harassment allegations. Most recently fired two of the people working on their AI ethics department for maybe being women, but maybe also being upstarts, feisty women, and saying...
They also fired their head of a recruiter that recruited for HBCUs.
Yeah.
Right.
So I don't think Google should be off the hook yet. I think they've just
They've had some groups of employees that have stood up.
Oh, they've been very active. Yeah, as have Microsoft employees, Amazon employees. But here's the problem: under Kotick's leadership, the company's market value has gone up in 10 years from $14 billion to $54 billion.
Wow.
And those numbers talk. They speak to the board. They speak to stakeholders. They speak to Wall Street. But when you get the Wall Street Journal and suddenly writing articles about you, I think, on the board, the time has come, I think, maybe.
Well, you also can't say that number was because of him. I think those numbers are in spite of him. Think about how much more money they would have made if people loved working there and maybe stayed longer or maybe decided to present their ideas of unique gaming franchises could have been born that were
very good because point.
Of this
very
this
good point
atmosphere there.
Yeah. Call of Duty, Candy Crush, World of Warcraft, But what other great ideas did you not see? Because, you know, that's an excellent point. Kotick's pay package in 2020, $154 million.
Wow.
He's one of the highest paid chief executives in the U.S. After the Journal approached Activision with questions for this article, the Journal says, Kotick told employees he'd asked the board to reduce his total annual compensation to $62,500. And that the company was implementing a zero-tolerance harassment policy and ending mandatory arbitration for harassment and discrimination claims.
Where did he come up with 62,000?
62,500.
Yeah, so that's the minimum in the state of, I believe it's the state of California, it's the minimum amount that you can pay for someone in that pay band. So it's a bizarrely government regulation thing.
Yeah,
someone at that level has to be paid that money.
But didn't Steve Jobs work for a buck a year? Yeah, but
Before this legislation came in, I believe.
Well, I'm glad that CEOs are protected so that they can't earn so little. We want to keep those CEOs above the poverty line. I think it's very important.
Leo, I think I'd probably take the Steve Jobs buck if I'd made $150 million the year before. I'd probably survive. Yeah. I'd survive.
It'd survive.
Yeah. Salary is not equal to compensation.
Well, so, and that's the other thing.
Like bonuses.
Yeah.
There's equity. There's all this stuff. So on paper, $60,000-something. Yeah, but you're probably getting
compensation. It's the minimum allowed under California law for salaried workers, $62,500. He also said he'll forego bonuses and equity grants. But as you say, last year he got $154 million. So he's still going to be able to have take a tuna fish sandwich to lunch. And you're a salaried worker. Do you? You don't make that much, John. Lisa's probably left by now, I hope. you make more than that, don't you? I hope you do. It's the minimum. Golly, we might have a walkout.
Awkward.
We might have a walkout on our hands right now. Not 600, 62,500. You make more than that. Yeah. Nobody here makes less than that. Are you salaried, John? You're hourly. You don't do a time card? Well, we have to work on that. I want to cut your pay, sir. You can, we can get you for $12 an hour. No, you deserve as much as we pay you and a buck more.
Thank you.
Yeah. Whew, that scared me for a minute. He thought it was 600.
Paying in MFTs.
He thought it was $602,000.
Start paying people in Bitcoin, Leo, or Twitcoin.
I love it. Twitcoin. We're going to pay everybody in Twitcoin. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
I'm taking my appearance fee in Twitcoin.
Yes. Fantastic. California Fair Employment Department of Fair Employment and Housing has and the Securities Exchange Commission all investigating. It's not over for Activision Blizzard. That story will continue. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised.
And I think that's the interesting thing is that it will continue. Yeah. And I think there was a big worry back in the summer when this all kicked off for the first time, that this would be one of those stories that created a huge ruckus for a few weeks and then just got swept under the carpet and nobody came back to it and everything just went back to kind of being crappy for the people there. And so if we're going to take anything positive from the situation, it's that people are still talking about this and still being active around this and still pushing for this to be made right. And we haven't just brushed it under the carpet. I think that says something about the state of where we are right now.
We can thank the Wall Street Journal for that, I think, largely.
But when you see somebody as establishment and corporate as the Wall Street Journal saying something, I think that's that's a signal, you know, that's the, you know, time's up, as they say. Mm-hmm. Let's take a little break.
Ooh,
come back with
nice use of words.
You like that? You like that?
Yeah. That was good.
Very good.
Wesley Faulkner's here. Tell us about databases. Singlestore.com.
Single store. Databases. So usually there are generally two types of databases. One, you do data ingest, and one, you do your analytical processing. So when you do that, you have to copy the data over from where you originally got all of the data into this place that does all the processing, or you do your artificial intelligence, and to actually get some actionable insights out of it. Single store allows you to do all of that in one database, which means you only have one copy of your data that's needed. So you don't have to pay for having two different databases. It's single technology, and you also don't have to pay for storage that is duplicated from going in this old process. And so not only does it allow you to do this in one system because you don't have to do the transfer, it also happens really fast. So we're one of the fastest analytical, if not the fastest analytical database out there that can do ingest and transform your data into actionable insights.
So, you know, so Wesley, I'd like to get your take on graphical databases and the future of those in IT and in enterprise IT.
What's a graphical database? You don't mean like with pictures. You mean graphs. Like
relationships. Oh, well, it means relationships database. Between two.
Yeah, yeah.
Graph database, not graphical. Graph database, like TigerBeat or Neo4j or one of those. What do you think the future is of those? Because they're starting to grow in use.
Versus, say, relational database.
Versus relational, right?
Well, graphical databases are hard and very specialized. And I think even if we do some graphical transformations, but of course, you will get better transformations in the specialized database for graphical. But something in terms of like single store, we do like 80% of the use cases. So we do most of it that people use. But graphical databases for those who are trying to understand what relational instead of like for a graphical database is kind of like what you use Facebook
The social graph or the knowledge graph.
Social graph. Of saying who's connected to who and who's what relationship and
it's not as hierarchical because instead of being a hierarchical database, everything's connected to everything else. It's more like life, to be honest with you.
It's a big mesh.
But it's a hard thing to do. As Microsoft is wont to say, it's a tough computer science problem.
I think my major question would be, I mean, just hearing what you're saying, and if I'm hearing you correctly, you can help me transform my graphical appearance to improve my relationships.
Not at all. No. But
because I could use some help.
Well,
if you pay enough money, then yes.
Yes, we can do it.
Thank you. The graph databases connect a lot of dots that are already in place, and they're very quick. They're very fast at what they do, and more and more businesses are learning how to use them. And Google and Facebook and LinkedIn and a lot of others are already using them, and all the social networks are using them right now. But that's going to trickle down.
Yeah, it's just the percentage of the space that rely on graphical databases is still relatively tiny with all of the other use cases, like with geospatial time series. There's all kinds of different specialized databases. We do a lot of those things. So like I said, we do probably like 80% of the functions that you'll need to do some of those things. I agree. Relational databases are extremely specialized, but they help you tease out insights from like if this person likes these things, then they probably like these things, which is connected to this thing.
Right.
It really, really brings that data to the forefront.
Yeah,
it
goes hand in hand with artificial intelligence for sure.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And if O'Reilly were an advertiser, I would tell you they have a big sale on their graph algorithms, brand new.
Just came out.
Yep. I've been trying to learn a little bit about this because it is soon to be December 1st, the advent of code begins, and I always try to do this, solve this. I know listeners have watched me bang my head against the wall. It's really fun. It's 50 programming problems, two a day for 25 days as you get from December 1st to December 25th, usually having something to do with Santa Claus and elves. And they're really fun. And I usually get to about day six before I go, And the thing that's always stops me is frankly, graphs. So I'm trying to get – it's odd that you should have asked that question, Chris, because I'm trying to get good at this. because I only have two more weeks to understand it.
There are tons of graphical libraries that you can do.
I know. Well, I'm trying to do it in Lisp. There you go. There's my problem right there. Okay. In a nutshell.
Yeah. I tried to do Lisp, but I try to use like an Alexa, or I use like Google Home, and it just cannot understand.
It doesn't understand your Lisp. There's actually somebody on Reddit. There's a /r/Lisp, which is about the Lisp programming language. Somebody posted on there, how do I get rid of my Lisp? And that, as you might imagine, went nowhere. So we'd like to announce our new studio manager. Welcome to, no, John, you're still here, right? You're not leaving yet. Okay. $602,000 he wants. That's it. Our show today brought to you by, I'll get you a privacy card. How about that? Privacy.com. I do not now buy anything online with my regular credit cards. I use my privacy cards. I love these. I have now created hundreds of them, and I'll tell you why. Every time you create a privacy.com card, it looks like a regular credit card to the vendor. But you have a few choices. You can have it be a one-time only card. They use it. That's it. It can never be used again. More often, I'll use the merchant-specific card. So when I set up my Amazon account, I create a privacy card for Amazon, and only Amazon can use that card. If anybody else tries to, it's declined immediately. It's eliminated fraud for when I buy online. It's brilliant. There's one other reason you want a privacy. Well, there's many reasons, but there's one other big reason. And it's the only time whenever I'm using setting up a subscription or a recurring payment, I've learned my lesson. I use my privacy.com credit cards. It lets you control your subscriptions and recurring payments so that you're never accidentally billed twice or upgraded to another service without your consent. And furthermore, you can set a spending limit with any privacy card so they can't overcharge you. And if you are tired of the subscription, you don't have to jump through hoops. You just pause your privacy card. And that's it. That's it. No, you don't have to call the customer service or anything. Privacy blocks the charges. And they'll also notify you if somebody tries to charge over the allotted amount. You always stay within your budget. I just think it's great. Another way I use privacy cards, I've mentioned this before. My mom, who's 88, she lives in Rhode Island. She just doesn't want to cook anymore. I don't blame her. She cooked for me my whole childhood. Brilliant cook. And I said, Mom, don't cook. Let me buy you dinner. I gave her a privacy card. And as soon as she used it with, I can't remember, it was DoorDash. It locked into DoorDash. I said, use it anytime you want. And it was really easy to share with her. There's no copy and paste. I didn't have to text message or screenshot or anything. They don't need a privacy card account. I just clicked the share button when I created the card for her, click a share button, gave them her email address, and privacy handled the rest. So it was really great. She's 88. I didn't want to make a complicated thing for her. It made it very easy for her. There's a Chrome extension, a Firefox extension, that will automatically fill out credit card information, create new cards for you on demand. I can go on and on. I'm a big fan of this. I've been using it for years. I just think it's so great. I get a great account summary every month. Makes it easy for me to track how much I've been spending. They've got a summary page now. It's great for budgeting. You can filter by date. And they've just added tagging, which is really good because I have so many privacy cards because I create a new card for every merchant. You can tag it so you can sort your cards by category. It makes it very easy. I just think this is the best thing ever. Now, I should explain. It's not a charge card. You don't run a balance. You tie it into your debit card or to your bank account. So don't think of it as a charge card. Think of it as a way to securely use a credit card anywhere you don't want to give your credit card number out, anywhere you don't want the merchant to know anything about you. It masks your real bank information. Your bank statement will say exactly who all the charges went to if you want, so you know. You can turn that off, too, if you don't want to have that information. I just think it's great. Protect your financial identity online. Virtual cards with privacy.com. Go to privacy.com/twit. Sign up for an account. If you're a new customer, you'll get $5 to spend on your first purchase. That's our way of saying thank you for using that address so they know you saw it here. Privacy.com/twit. Sign up now. I hope I've convinced you. This is the best thing ever. Credit card companies used to do these burner cards. They stopped. Privacy does it, and I think it's wonderful. Privacy.com/twit. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Privacy.
Can I say something about Privacy?
Is that okay?
the limits are per charge, per month, or like per the whole entire thing. And I use it for my cell phone bill.
Yeah.
And one month it should be the same, and then went over the limit and I got it auto denied by privacy.
They said, isn't that awesome?
Believe it's charged. And so I said, what was, and so I called my cell phone provider. I was like, what happened? And it was a billing error. And you know how they tack on these extra fees for nothing.
Yep.
Yeah. And so it saved my butt.
You can't be stuffed. You know, because that's another problem with cell phone companies is you get these extra stuffing charges. Mm-hmm. They can't pull one over on you. It's great. I'm a big fan.
How does the business model work for them? Is it per instance?
I think that it's like a credit card. I think they get the credit card fee. They're happy to get that. You should look. Go sign up because there's different levels. I have a plan, and I think if you have enough charges a month, it's it pays for itself. I pay a little extra to them, like mm-hmm. $10 a month, to get 1% back. But I use it so much that it's, you know, a net positive for me. So they have fees, and there's business fees too. So there's ways to they monetize. Obviously, they monetize. They can buy an ad on Twit. So, and I hope they monetize because I don't want them to ever stop. American Express used to do this. Discover used to do this, and they all stopped. I don't know why. Maybe merchants don't like it. They probably don't. But the merchant doesn't know. It looks like a normal credit card to them. They don't know. Ha ha.
And today's Sunday, but I saw that they started Black Friday today with like at Kohl's.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Places.
Of course.
And so if there's some sketchy vendors out there that you want to buy something, using the one-time merchant card is highly advisable.
Oh, God. I was talking with a friend. I used to buy phone cases. They made these beautiful leather phone cases from a company in Argentina. But every time I used a credit card, it would buy the case, but then would buy a few other things. And I just, it was not good. So, I mean, a lot of times when you're online and you're buying from somebody you don't know, it's a great way to go. Boy, they just got an extra couple of minutes on that ad. But you know what? We try to do ads for companies that do good stuff. And it's not unusual for people to go, yeah, I use that. Apple cars are coming.
No steering wheels. No steering wheels.
One
no
button.
Pedals.
Just a button.
You push a button, and this is supposed to be by like 2030 or 2025.
Yeah, they're 2025. So we've been hearing this rumor for a decade that Apple was going to do a car. I actually never credited, except for the fact that there's at least 1,000 people working there. They keep hiring away big executives, engineers from companies like Tesla. And now Mark Gurman has the story on Bloomberg. He is definitely the best connected Apple rumor guy. He says Apple's pushing to accelerate development of its electric car, focusing around full self-driving, according to people familiar with the matter. And Kevin Lynch, this just happened a couple of months ago. The guy who really made the Apple Watch what it was has been moved over to Apple cars, which usually means when Apple does that kind of executive move, it's like, okay, time to
kick
it.
They're serious. They're serious.
Yeah. Apple shares went up 2.4% after this Bloomberg story. So it's not just other people believe it. Project Titan has been around since 2014. So it's been 7 years now.
Wow.
The former head of the team left in September to go to Ford after 3 years in charge. And that's when Kevin Lynch came in. Not a car guy, but a product guy and a guy who can bring a product to market. So this will be very interesting to see. Of course, Apple has no comment. And you're right, by the way, Chris. I thought you were joking. Apple's ideal car would have no steering wheel and pedals.
I thought you were joking. No, I am a made of facts here.
He is a man made of facts. Its interior would be designed around hands-off driving. One option discussed, according to Bloomberg, features an interior similar to the one in the Canoe lifestyle vehicle, which is basically a living room on wheels.
Mm-hmm. Luxurious.
You sit along the sides of the vehicle and face each other like you would in a stretch.
You could have a cocktail party.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get into an accident facing sideways. That feels good.
Yeah.
I think what's really tough about this is it's kind of difficult to see what value like Apple is going to bring beyond software. You know, if the key to a self-driving car basically is software, it's not really a combination of software and hardware. It's difficult to see what Apple's going to do that isn't going to be replicable. Because, I mean, if you think back to the original iPhone, the thing that made a lot of the iPhone features so compelling on that original iPhone in 2007 was the fact they basically twisted AT&T's arm into providing a lot of iPhone-specific features. You remember, like, visual voicemail wasn't something that existed and was something that Apple sort of negotiated with AT&T as a sort of special provision of their hardware being on that carrier. And it's difficult to see how kind of Apple is going to go to, you know, states and say, create road networks that specifically have some feature that's going to work for the Apple phone or do anything, you know. Apple was able, has always been able to create its own ecosystem. But the problem with roads is that they are, by definition, an open ecosystem. So it's hard to see how Apple can leverage anything proprietary.
Here's a, CNN's editor, former Jalopnik editor, trying Tesla's full self-driving system in New York City. And just the picture alone will tell you he's constantly grabbing the wheel and saying, no, not there, no. It's challenging, especially when you have non-self-driving vehicles competing with you in the same space, in an unpredictable space. The other problem for Apple is Apple's, I guess every tech company has to do this, and certainly car companies have to do this. You're aiming in the distant 3 to 5 year future. Things could change a lot. For instance, I don't know how much longer personal ownership of cars is going to be around. It's a very wasteful thing.
One thing I wanted to point out, about what Will said, is like, what could Apple bring? And that is working with municipalities. There are so many sensors on roads today that people don't use. You ever sit at a red light and just wait for it to turn and it senses the car over a magnetometer that there is a car there. And then it knows how long to cycle the light. Those are all attached to sensors. So Apple could definitely make agreements with municipalities and cities about how these, how that data is collected, housed, and they can make use of that in real time. That's something that of scale that Tesla has yet to do, to work formally with with municipalities to get that data and to formalize it. And so that definitely could be an edge for them to roll this out. But I also agree that, you know, making a car is hard because you're dealing with other people and other humans on the road and animals and
there are too many variables.
Roads that are broken. Yeah, there's so many variables. But it is possible 5 years, though, which means that they would actually have to start building the car a year and a half at least before that 2025 date, because it takes so long just to build a car. Do you remember when Elon was in production hell? And they've made cars before, and then they were trying to make the Model 3. It took them a while before they could even get working cars off that line.
Well, there was a rumor, and I think it's probably true, that Apple wouldn't necessarily have to make the car. There's certainly conceivable they might do a deal with a regular U.S. auto manufacturer like Ford. The rumor was that they were working with an Austrian company, Magna, that builds cars for a lot of companies. That's kind of what they are, is a white label car manufacturer. So they're an OEM for cars. So you don't have to actually know how to build the car. They're building the new Fisker Ocean. I think they build a Toyota. They build a number of cars. So in Austria. So you don't have to actually have the auto manufacturer. I think you were right when you said, Will, that it's software that's really going to define an Apple car. They may say, we're going to give it the Apple brand and the Apple look and feel. It'll be like a rolling Apple store, a lot of maple and, comfy chairs and stools for the kids. But they don't have to make it. They just have to make it work. Not that that's an easy thing to do. We've been hearing about level 4 and level 5 autonomy. I mean, Elon said he'd have it 2 years ago. He said, by 2020,
I think Elon's had full self-driving coming next week for about 5 years.
Didn't he say at one point that Tesla owners would be able to just let anybody use their car? They could rent it out as a taxi when they're not using it? Things like that. It's hard, apparently harder to do.
Reality is setting in. I'm not seeing any Google autonomous cars around in Mountain View at all anymore. And we used to see them pretty regularly.
The Waymos, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I haven't seen one in, well, COVID has something to do with it probably, but I don't know. COVID is the result or is the excuse for a lot of things.
They're moving all those Waymos up the peninsula to San Francisco. They are starting to do driverless Waymo in San Francisco, not downtown. That would be a little much to ask, but out in the avenues. And we had this story a couple of weeks ago about the self-driving Waymos that got lost, that kept going down a road in San Francisco and making U-turns because they were obeying traffic laws. No one else did, but they were obeying traffic laws that said commercial vehicles can't drive down this. So they ended up on a dead end on 15th Avenue where they'd have to turn around.
Oh, boy. So that's where they all went.
All on 15th Avenue, actually, Chris. That's where they all went. It's still not a wonderful story for the future of self-driving vehicles. Yeah. I think it's interesting. I mean, this Apple rumor is, you know, a rumor that will never die. But it's pretty clear that they are putting money into it.
When are we getting the TV? That's what I want to
know. Oh, come on.
Aren't we supposed to have the TV by now?
Come on.
The TV will be in the car.
Yeah, well, that's the other story is everybody's trying and testing out. If you're not driving, what are you going to do? Of course, you're going to watch advertisements. What else would you do? So everybody's testing out all these screens in the car that, you know, with content, advertising supported content. You wrote an interesting story, Chris, about Google's, what is this called? The bot in a box.
Oh yeah.
So this is another kind of AI you could talk to.
Well, this is a do-it-yourself one, apparently. It's no code. It's drag down menus and line of business employees can build their own bots, you know, and that seems way out there for me. But this is the way of the future, I think, with the way customers will connect with companies and vice versa. There are going to be more and more of these bots. And Google's making it easier and easier to build these.
Yeah.
And that's what that's all about.
This is no code. This is that new no code, low code stuff. I'm sure you're all over that, Wesley. What do you think of no code, low code?
Yeah, it enables more people to participate. Which is great. If Pivot Tables is very low code, but it's still not necessarily accessible to everyone who does spreadsheets. Right. So it's just making the level of entry a little bit lower so people who are inclined to build the stuff can do it.
Very interesting.
I wonder how much of Duplex is built into this, and I'm sure that they learned a lot from that project.
That's the voice thing that calls and makes a reservation at a restaurant for you. They announced that a couple of years ago at Google I.O. It's slowly inching out into the real world. Mm-hmm. My Pixel 6 will now, if I get put on hold, monitor it and then tell me that, there's somebody on the line for you. And I think there's some Duplex built into this as well with navigating phone trees and stuff. So it's slowly, it's just like self-driving cars. It's coming, but it's coming slower and in different ways than we might have expected. And that's why I think Apple getting into the car business is interesting, because I think it's a hard thing to aim 5 years into the future. But Apple's done that in the past, and it's not the only project Apple's working on. I think they're trying desperately to say what's next after the iPhone, including AR, self-driving vehicles. Jean-Louis Gasset a couple of weeks ago in his Monday Note wrote, I thought, a pretty compelling piece saying the future for Apple is health. That's where there's going to be billions of dollars. They're already in it with the Apple Watch and the iPhone. And if they can come up...
I see you're in a car crash. Should we call 911?
Yeah. I just turned that on, by the way. My Google Pixel has a feature that says, if you get in a car crash, we'll call your wife. I'm just waiting. I'm going to run into the wall or something, and it's going to call my wife saying, your husband's dead.
I really don't want anything that's going to call my wife automatically based on something that I haven't chosen to do. That just feels like a recipe.
What could possibly go wrong?
I think you're right, Leo. I think when you look at Apple, you know, one of the interesting questions for them is, you know,
what's next?
Is what's next? What is left to who's the famous guy that was like, and he wept because there were no more lands left to conquer?
That's right.
It's like, what else is there? The only thing that can move Apple's market cap enough to generate return for shareholders is probably health or cars, or I mean aviation, maybe, although there's not good margins in aviation. I don't think we're going to see an Apple jet, but there is certainly, you know, it certainly doesn't seem to be much, you know. I joked about the Apple TV, but it's like there's no margins in making a television, you know, and OEMing something and putting Apple software in it.
They need an Apple printer.
They had an Apple printer.
Well, they used to.
Honestly, the first laser writer. $5,000.
We will have artificial intelligence living on Mars before we have a printer that reliably connects via AirPrint. I'm positive of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Alexander cried. He wept because there were no more lands to conquer.
That's the dude.
There's the English public school education coming to a fore. Let's take a little break. Will Harris, I love having you on, Will. You're just the greatest.
It's always such great fun to be
here. And he's staying up late with us in England. It's it is now midnight, a little after midnight in London. So if you're in an Irish pub, go home. That was the funniest thing.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
You can't stay here. That was the funniest thing. So there's a spike of COVID, thanks to Delta, I think, and large numbers of unvaccinated people all over Europe. Ireland's choice to knock this spike down is to close the pubs at midnight.
Well, that'll do it.
it's a perfect solution. anything you want to, you're doing, congratulations on selling Entail. That's fantastic. You deserve all that success. And so you're going to work for DMG for a little bit?
Yeah, going to work. They're working on some interesting new projects for 2022. And mostly just working on building up that Twitter and Instagram following. So keep hitting me up on at Will Harris.
All right. That's my major plug. What really counts. At Will Harris. One L in Will. That's the most.
It's all about the self-promotion, isn't it?
Yeah. That's hit me up, baby. Hey, we were talking about Google and robot text messaging. But I want to actually talk about our sponsor, Podium, because it really is the case that customers these days expect to interact with you in a kind of more intimate way. And I think some of this came from quarantine because we were, you know, getting texts, sending texts saying, I'm going to pick up my donuts, have them out front, or getting texts saying your food is on the way. And more, that's how we want to interact with businesses. Podium is the ultimate text messaging platform for you and for your employees. If you own a business, you know there are not enough hours in a day to waste playing phone tag. And your customers don't want to do it either, right? The list of customers you need to reach doesn't get any shorter, especially if business is good. Knock on wood, it's good for you. That's why local businesses everywhere are turning to Podium. It makes every interaction easy for you. And easy for your customers, as easy as sending text. So everything that makes your business great can be done faster. Perfect example, left my dentist office the other day. They sent me a text immediately saying your next appointment is here. Click a link in the text. It added it to the calendar. I left the ice cream shop the other day. They said, how was the ice cream? Leave us a review. And of course, you're much more likely, having just had that delicious ice cream, to say, yeah, I'll leave a review on Yelp or Google or whatever. And Podium empowers that. But it's not just reviews. It's not just appointments. It's collecting payments. It's marketing. Actually, that same ice cream shop sends me a Podium message every once in a while saying, we haven't seen you in a while. How would you like a 10% off our Rocky Road coupon? That is mean. That's just mean. Podium isn't a better way to communicate. It's a better way to do everything, whether it's gathering reviews, collecting payments, even marketing to your customers. Podium makes it all as easy as pressing send. You won't just free up more time for yourself. You'll grow your business. You'll get more done. And your customers will love you. With Podium, you'll close deals with customers before the competition even has a chance to call them back. Well, that's another way Podium is really cool. These days, when I'm looking for somebody, I had to find a glazier to fix a window. I went online, found a bunch of glaziers, sent them texts saying, give me a quote. This is what I need. And the guy who got back to me first, guess what? He's the guy who got the job. Podium. Join more than 100,000 businesses that already use Podium to streamline their customer interactions. You can get started for free at Podium, podium.com/twit. Or if you sign up for a paid Podium account, you'll get a free credit card reader. Some restrictions apply. That's podium.com/twit. Podium's on a roll. I saw they just did a big raise. They are hot right now. And you'll see why when you start using them. Podium.com/twit. Thank you, Podium, for making my life easier, for sponsoring Twit. And thank you, Twit listeners, for helping us out by going to that address so they know you saw it here. Podium.com/twit. We were talking about this earlier today on the Tech Guy Show. Rod Piles, our space expert. Earlier this week, the denizens of the International Space Station, Russian cosmonauts along with Americans, were told to immediately evacuate the space station and go to their launch vehicles, their capsules, because a debris field was on its way. The debris field, which did in fact pass by but missed, thank goodness, the space station, was created by a Russian anti-satellite test. It destroyed one of its own satellites early Monday, sent thousands, 1,500 pieces of trackable fragments into space, 300 miles up, not so far from the orbit of the International Space Station. And they will be there, moving at thousands of miles an hour and posing a threat to anything that will cross their path for years. Kind of irresponsible. It's not, by the way, the Russians aren't the only people that have anti-satellite technology, ASAT. We've done ASAT tests, so have the Chinese. Although, in most cases, I think the way to do it responsibly is somewhere where it won't impact people in space. There will be a potential collision risk to most satellites in low Earth orbit from the fragmentation of Cosmos 1408 over the next few years to decades, according to Leo Labs, a private space tracking company. There's even some evidence that Russia did this to attract the attention for their space program, which hasn't been going very well lately. I don't know. Here's a visualization of the near miss. There's the Cosmos 1408, the debris. There's the International Space Station. Whew.
Wow.
Yeah. They sheltered in their capsules for a while. I don't remember how long, an hour or so, and then we're able to go back into the space station. Here's the ASAT explosion. There's the debris field.
Oh.
Nice. Yeah, that's pleasant.
Oh, boy. Is this a potential new market for companies to go up there and clean up space?
So we were talking about that, too. And apparently there are a number of companies. There's a Japanese company, among others, who are doing space cleanup stuff. They're trying all sorts of different technologies, magnets, nets.
As a Star Trek fan, I hope this is where we start creating the deflector dish. This is the reason for this, it.
You're going to need it. Away from you. You're going to need it. Yeah. You know, just one of those things could destroy the space station, literally vaporize it. As you know, if you ever saw Sandra Bullock flying through the air in Gravity. Actually, Rod Pyle, our space guy, was telling me that the space station's one of the windows was damaged. It's like a 14-layer window. Was it the shuttle? One of the windows was damaged by a paint chip.
Whoa.
Paint chip that was coming at it at 1,500 miles an hour. So Chris Hadfield says more regulations are needed to protect astronauts from space debris. He was the first commander of the International Space Station. He said that, you know, we're prepared for this. We're trained for it. It does happen. But there's really no excuse.
Russia, like, say they denied even doing this? So, like, what regulation can you do?
Well, the sad thing is that there were Russian cosmonauts in the space station. Secretary of State Blinken accused Russia of launching the missile in a reckless and irresponsible strike. You know, there was some upset over all of this. And yet, you know, it is always going to be a potential problem. I don't know what the answer is. Yeah, and we're sending more stuff all the time. And, of course, the other thing Rod and I talked about is the Kessler syndrome, which is probably not likely. Space is a big place, even though there's lots of debris up there. The space station can maneuver. But should you have a chain reaction of debris hitting debris, creating more debris, and then that debris hitting and more debris, the Kessler syndrome actually, at the end of it, it's a chain reaction that you could actually blot the sun out because of all this debris. So I don't know. I don't want to scare anybody. Something a little nervous.
I mean, that is the definition of in space. Nobody can hear you scream.
Yeah.
As a paint chip hits your window.
Yeah. Terrifying.
One of my fraternity brothers, hi Dave, he does track debris, space debris, and he says there's so much of it. And the hardest part of it is that you can only track debris of a certain size. Once it gets smaller, it's almost like invisible to any tracking system that we have with current technology. So All the smaller debris is more dangerous than some of the bigger one, because you can track that and you can like maneuver, like fire thrusters, get around it. It's all these tiny little bits that are like little bullets just flying through the space and can cause a lot of damage.
Elizabeth Holmes on trial. The Theranos trial continues. See, if I were down where you are, Chris, I might be going to that and sitting in the trial. I like watching trials. Elizabeth Holmes took the stand this week. And according to The Verge, Elizabeth Lopato took that opportunity to lie through her teeth to the jury. Roger Parloff of Fortune actually made some recordings. In the recordings, Holmes claimed that Theranos worked with the military, was currently working with pharmaceutical companies, or at the time, that the company could do more than 1,000 tests on its proprietary machines, and that the results were at the highest level of quality. None of this was true.
Now, was Elizabeth writing a news story, or is this an analysis? Because it sounds like she's making a judgment in that.
Yeah, but if it's not true, it's not true, right?
Well, I know, but she got proof.
Wait a minute. Let's see here. Okay, so I'm confusing this. This wasn't Holmes on the stand. This was Holmes talking to a Fortune author back in 2014. So it's not illegal, obviously, to lie to a reporter.
And it happens all the time.
Now the 10 hours of taped conversations have been introduced into the trial. I think Holmes is expected to testify. Isn't she going to take the stands?
She's in what they call deep doo-doo, I'm afraid.
I don't think it's going well for her.
No. No. I've got evidence. Yeah. That's if the evidence is not what you're talking about, that's not good for you. Not good.
So, Perloff writes, it was, or Lopato writes, it was remarkable to hear the recordings of Holmes lying in her own voice. We've heard now in the trial from multiple investors about what she told them. It's been consistent. The platform could basically do anything. Pharma companies had validated it. It had been used in the battlefield. But those investors did not record, as the Forbes reporter did.
Was it in her own voice? I mean, was it in her own
voice? No. She talked like that, didn't she? the trial goes on. Interesting. Tesla has ranked dead last on Consumer Reports reliability list.
Oh.
Almost dead last.
What's last? What's the last one?
27th out of 28. Only Lincoln, Ford's luxury brand, comes out worse. Most of it has to do with the overall instability of electric vehicles in general, SUVs, which Consumer Reports' Jake Fisher said during a presentation of the absolute bottom in terms of reliability. That surprises me, actually. My experience with electric vehicles is they're more reliable. They're certainly a lot simpler than ICE vehicles.
You don't have to go to oil changes or anything like that.
Yeah, they're virtually zero maintenance. Mm-hmm. Consumer Reports surveys owners of vehicles. In fact, I get that survey every year as a member. 300,000 vehicles from model year 2000 to 2021. They use that data to make predictions about models and their reliability history. Battery-powered electric vehicles, a bigger segment of this list this year than ever before, and their reliability ratings varied widely. But gas electric hybrids among the most reliable vehicles overall, possibly because many of these electric vehicles are new to the market, right? It's their, you know.
Yeah, I think they're new to the market, and also a lot of the build processes for building them are still sort of, you know, halfway sort of still in beta. I mean, there's quite a lot of if you spend a lot of time on car TikTok, as I do, car talk. Because I'm down with the kids like that. You see a lot of, people taking deliveries of their first Teslas, and, you know, the plastics inside are moving around and the headlamps are fogging up.
Yeah.
And, if you put a ding in one of your doors, it's a 6-month back order to get a new door because you can't just beat it out like a normal panel. So I think that it feels a lot like Tesla is doing a very good job of getting more cars out in the market quickly, but that the build quality is slightly lacking as they continue to refine those processes.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got to think that, you know, ICE vehicles have been being built for, 100 years at this point, and Tesla's been building cars for, 10, maybe?
Yeah.
Well, not just that. They're notorious for inserting new parts in the middle of a stream. So they get an upgraded steering wheel or button or whatever, and they'll just put it in the line instead of sticking with the same formula for the model year of the vehicle. And so they'll throw that in. But I love hearing, Will, that you're into CTT, which is great.
Car TikTok. Car TikTok. Jake Fisher, Senior.
Between that and the terror and a lot of air fryer recipes, cars and air fryers have become my TikTok algorithm.
Air fryer.
See, I am on the Kitchen Confidential subreddit, in which they mock air fryers as being convection ovens with an extra fan. So, there's a battle now going on in social media. Jake Fisher, Senior Director of Auto Testing at Consumer Reports, said there's electric drivetrains aren't so much the problem. He told CNBC, unnecessary high-tech bells and whistles are the things that seem to fail a lot.
How about software performance on these? Because they're constantly being updated.
Right.
But I'm just wondering if they're, about bugs and stuff in new software.
I owned a Tesla Model X. It was very early in the production run. It was fine. There were a couple of reliability issues, but nothing spectacular. Mm-hmm. No, nothing worse than any other vehicle. And I love my Tesla, but it was stories like this that made me think maybe I shouldn't buy another Tesla. I ended up getting a Ford Mach-E electric vehicle, and that's apparently kind of in the middle of the reliability band, although I think it's early. It's only been out for less than a year. Consumer Reports said commonly reported issues from the new Model Y owners include defective sensors that had to be replaced, problems with heat pumps, air conditioning, body panels that didn't line up. That's been a consistent problem. A fit and finish for a Tesla for a long time. Water leaks in the trunk due to missing seals. We did have that problem because I had the Falcon Wing doors. Lisa hated that car, by the way. But the other reason I didn't buy another Tesla is Lisa said, over my dead body. But they had the Falcon Wing doors, and you never wanted to open them in the rain because it was designed in such a way that the rain would collect at the top of the door, and when you opened it up, it would just water fall in. It was great. it was just bad design, Owners reported a variety of electrical and hardware issues with the higher price and less popular Model S and Model X Falcon Wing. Older models fare better in reliability because companies tweak and redesign to solve problems. But Tesla deviates from this approach. This is what you were saying. This is Fisher talking. At almost random times during the year, Tesla will switch major components, suppliers, or sensors and other units. The more you change, the greater chances you're going to have some problems.
Absolutely. That's what I've heard.
As the great Marcel Proust said, la plus ça change, the greater the chances you're going to have some problems. That makes a lot of sense.
That was exactly what he said.
He said exactly right. Uh-huh.
The See? More you change in the middle of a model year, the more likely you are to get build reliability issues. See? Marcel Proust.
I didn't get an English public school education, but I know my Proust. Black Friday coming up. Are you all excited?
That's today.
Today's Black Friday.
I'm old enough to remember when Black Friday was on Friday.
Was on Friday. Remember, yeah, like, people would line up in front of Target and then kill each other trying to get to the cheap TV. But that, yeah. I don't think that happens now. You buy online, right?
That's right. You don't see the lines anymore as much. You might see in some, you know, far-flung areas you might, but not in the city.
And remember, they called it Cyber Monday because people waited. They wouldn't buy on Friday. They would wait till they get back to the fast internet at work to go online and buy.
Don't have to do that.
No. In fact, the internet at work usually isn't as fast as the internet at home these days. And Friday has expanded to November. Black Friday is Black November now, I think. Well, Google has its deals. Apple has some deals. Amazon has some deals. But you probably aren't going to want to go to the wire cutter to find out what to buy or not buy, because the wire cutter's employees are threatening a Black Friday strike.
Treat your employees like people.
Yeah. Wire cutter is owned by the New York Times. They say, we make a lot of money for the New York Times. After 2 years of bargaining, the Times companies continue to delay our negotiations. This is, I'm quoting wirecutterunion.com. Through unfair labor practices and wage offers that are significantly underpay our staff. I'm sympathetic. I love the wire cutter. And if they're not getting what they deserve, Black Friday is a nightmare for anybody working on tech blogs, especially the wire cutter. The two worst days of the year for wire cutter employees are at Prime Day and Black Friday, because they constantly update the blog like for 24 hours with the best deals and deals not to get and so forth. Our staff works around the clock, the union says. During the Black Friday shopping week, our busiest and most profitable time of year, putting extra hours in over the holidays to serve our readers. Our labor continues to bring in record revenue for the Times and helped to grow the Wirecutter by 10,000 subscribers in the past quarter. Now, they're saying to everybody, if we do not reach a deal by Black Friday, do not cross the picket line. Do not shop through Wirecutter on Black Friday through Cyber Monday. Let me guess. Let me guess. I'm thinking as the autocrat in the group, Will Harris, that you're not a fan of labor unions.
That's an absolutely outrageous.
Oh, good. All right. Okay.
To direct at somebody from the UK.
As a big entrepreneur, unions,
which has some of the strongest, some of the strongest labor.
I'm just teasing you.
So as somebody who, the son of a teacher who is, if you're not in a teacher's union over here, you're not a great place to be. And as somebody who works in a building full of journalists that are in the National Union of Journalists, which provides very important, legal protections and rights for journalists working in the area, extremely important to do. I think where... I slightly, not that I lack sympathy, but where I take issue slightly with the with some of the rhetoric that the wire cutter guys have deployed is sort of, well, the New York Times has got X amount of cash in its cash reserves, and we're only asking for 1% of that as rises. And I think it's very difficult to sort of draw a direct line between a company's cash reserves and what it should be, paying people. Otherwise, Apple, everybody right. that worked at Apple would be on, $20 million a year, and you wouldn't even touch Apple's cash reserves. I think there's a difference between, the New York Times as a whole is obviously, coming back stronger and is doing well, but I think you can't necessarily draw a straight line between that and exactly what people should be being paid. But if they're not being paid fairly, then of course they should be entitled to take action. And I think the fact that, obviously they're based in New York, which has got some of the better labor practices.
The Times itself is unionized, actually.
Yeah.
So is the Journal, the Post, Reuters, the Associated Press. I mean, it's not unusual. It is unusual in the tech industry, though. The tech industry is kind of a hereditary aversion to unions.
We need a tech journalist union. We need to start right away.
I agree, Chris. I'm actually a proud union member. I'm a member of AFTRA-SAG because I've done a radio show for many years, and I'm all in favor of unions, but I know not all of my colleagues working in the tech journalism sector think it's a good idea. How do you feel about it, Chris?
Well, I mean, for most people, for some people, it would be good. For a person like me, though, I have my own business now, so. And I'm contributing to a couple different publications, and I ghostwrite for other organizations, and I'm ghost editing for a large social network too.
Did you get hurt by SB8? Was it SB8? The California Independent Contractors Law. I know a lot of people. Aunt Pruitt was one of them. Who lost his contract reporting gig because it would have been an onerous burden for Tech Republic to keep him on as a contractor.
Okay, I know. It hasn't affected me. So
it hasn't.
I don't know
okay.
about that.
There are also
Tech Republic, by the way, was just sold by Red Ventures, which now owns ZDNet.
Wait a minute. Red Ventures sold Tech Republic?
Yeah, from what I understand, to Technology Advice, my old publisher.
Oh, my goodness.
I think this just happened a couple weeks ago.
So Red Ventures bought most of ZD, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
ZDNet, CNET.
CNET.
CBS ZDNet. Interactive.
Yes, CBS Interactive. Some others, too. There's a bunch
so
of properties.
So did they sell off just Tech Republic, or?
That's, to my knowledge, yes. I don't know if they sold any of it. Yeah.
Technology Advice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A B2B media company. Huh.
Privately held. They're 8 years, 9 years old. They're in Nashville, Tennessee, of all places.
Well, Tech Republic's in Louisville, so.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Maybe that makes sense from that regard.
Yeah. I worked for a year with them.
Well, we have lots of friends work at Tech Republic, including the editor-in-chief who's been on this show, was just on the show a few weeks ago. Wow.
Better check into that.
Bit of a shocker. Well, there's been a lot of turmoil thanks to the internet in the tech publications. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the reasons these companies are reluctant to unionize. It's not a predictable business. And it's been, in fact, a money loser for a lot of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It has been.
Yeah.
I think it's very easy, to look at the good times and want to cash in. But it's also goodness knows how much the New York Times has lost and invested over a very long period of time to get to where it is now. I suspect that whilst it might be profitable in that area now, I suspect as a net enterprise over the last 15 years, they're still pretty heavily in the red.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly right. And that's exactly why you can't say, well, look at your cash holdings. It took it was nip and tuck for a while for all newspapers. But the Times is one of the handful of success stories.
Yeah, Leo, I just looked this up. Technology Advice bought Tech Republic. Actually, it was announced in August, so it's been a little while.
I wasn't paying attention.
And it was $23 million what they bought.
Good. Good. Well, that's a decent amount of money. Enough money that they'll want to keep it going. Let's put it that way.
No, absolutely. They should invest in.
Yeah. 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 More coming up in just a little bit. We're going to take a little break. Before we do, though, I do want to let you know, if you missed this week, we had such a great week on Twit. We've even made a little movie for you.
Today, we are kicking off the very first book club at Twit TV.
Did you like Murderbot?
I did.
Like, not the book, the character?
I did. He's not going to like this, but that sounded like something Mr. Burke here in the studio would do.
Burke, you're Murderbot. I can only do one thing at a time. So this is, I'm like, man.
Thank you, I think.
Previously on Twit. Windows Weekly.
Microsoft really wants you to use Edge. They really, really want you to use Edge.
There is absolutely no reason this shouldn't be looked at by regulators. There is no rational justification other than we're looking to eke every penny we can out of everyone who uses this product, and we don't care if we do it through malicious means.
iOS Today.
Rosemary Orchard and I have some alternatives to Apple Arcade to show you.
I got to play games as my homework this week, Micah. It's not often that you get to play games as part of your homework.
Tech News Weekly.
What is self-service repair in comparison to I go into an Apple store and say, genius, fix this.
With this announcement, what they're also saying is, if you are a person who wants to repair your own stuff, And it's very specific models and it's very specific parts that are repairable. And you will be able to get access to our manuals and to our parts and all of that.
TWIT. Some assembly required.
Well, mostly you just have to assemble a TWIT. Hey, we're going to have a great promo next week. Wednesday, just a little plug on This Week in Google. We're going to be joined by venture capitalist Sam Lesson. His VC firm is starting to invest in creators. And we've talked about this on both TWIT and on TWIG in the last week. So we thought we'd get Sam on to talk about what that means, investing in creators. And maybe we can get him to give us a little. I don't know. It's just worth a try. So that's coming up. Meanwhile, first a word from Stamps.com. If you're looking for ways to skip that trip to the post office, especially as we get closer to the holiday season, dodge that hectic holiday shopping traffic. Save time and money with Stamps.com. We've been using Stamps.com since 2012. No, wait a minute. Longer than that. I think a decade now. We've been doing ads for Stamps.com since 2012. I love Stamps.com because I can do everything I can do at the post office without leaving the office. And without a special, you know, postage meter or special ink. I can use my computer, my printer, print U.S. postage, real U.S. postage. I can print right on the envelope if I want, which actually looks nice and pro. Puts a barcode on there, puts the indicia on there, my return address, our company logo. I could print postage for any size or shape or package. It's a great deal. And now, and this is such good news, Stamps.com has added UPS to their postal services. So now you can compare rates, print labels, and access exclusive discounts on both United States Postal Service services and UPS services. I bet you your business, like ours, sends more mail and packages during the holidays. This is the time. If you've been thinking about Stamps.com, if you have heard of Stamps.com but been waiting, sign up. Whether you're selling online or running an office, maybe you've got a side hustle selling on Etsy or eBay, Stamps.com can save you so much time, money, and stress during the holidays. Plus, it just looks more professional. It's funny how many things I've bought from Etsy that come in, you know, brown paper wrapped in twine with 100 stamps, obviously licked by hand, stuck to the front of it. I mean, that's nice, but you can look a little bit more professional. You can access all of the U.S. Postal Service and UPS shipping services without taking a trip. And you'll get discounts you can't find anywhere else. Up to 40% off Postal Service rates. Up to 76% off UPS. Going to the post office instead of using Stamps.com is like taking the stairs instead of the elevator. Oh, sure. It's a good exercise, but if you're going up 30 flights a day, you might want to take a break. Stamps.com. We have a great offer for you. Save time and money this holiday season with Stamps.com. Just click the link that says, heard us on a podcast. But please do me a favor. Type in the promo code TWIT. That's the most important thing because you're going to get the best offer on the Stamps.com website. 4-week trial, free postage, lots of it, a digital scale, and no long-term commitments or contracts. It's just a great way to try. Go to Stamps.com. Get all that holiday mailing done in the next 4 weeks. You're golden. Click the microphone at the top of the page. Enter the code TWIT. We're fans. I know you will be too. Stamps.com. And I love the post office. I do. I'm a fan. But I just go there to visit. When I have to mail something, I do it from here. Stamps.com.
So, Leo, can I jump in with a story?
Story of the week, Will Harris.
If we're taking suggestions.
Yes.
So, as somebody who finally this week managed to get their hands on an Xbox Series X.
What?
It seems apt to remember that this week is 20 years since the launch of the original Xbox.
Oh, I'll never forget.
Wow. Which I remember having the enormous controller and the... And so this week is the launch of Halo Infinite,
yeah,
which is out. Forza is going great guns, and it's remarkable to think that, you know, looking back 20 years ago, everyone thought that Microsoft were completely bonkers for launching into that market.
I have to play the Bill Gates meets The Rock Xbox launch video.
Yes.
This was before The Rock was, you know, the world-famous movie star, soon-to-be presidential candidate. This was when The Rock was merely a well-known wrestler.
Mm-hmm. This is the product that will be out later this year. And there's an amazing amount going on.
Bill Gates.
Working with
nerdy.
Partners who help build the hardware, working
such
with the software developers, working with the retailers. The program around this thing is really quite phenomenal. But the box itself is another thing that we put a lot of energy into. So you may have been wondering what
here
this
he is.
Great
there's a,
device
there's
was
something
here.
Under,
and they put a lot of energy into it. No wonder, because it was so bloody enormous.
For the first time, let me now unveil Xbox.
Oh, tepid applause from the non-journalists in the audience. Most journalists just sitting there going, wow, that's look at the size of that controller. Here's
He's
the
got
rock.
Hair. He's got hair on his head.
Here's The Rock.
That's fascinating.
Oh, boy.
I really think that the only reason they brought The Rock into this presentation is because he's the only person whose hands would make that controller look like a regular size.
Also,
I'm a big fan of yours. What? For instance, I know that you're a five-time WWF champion, not to mention one of the top entertainers in the world.
Bill, I'm very flattered. I'm a big fan of yours as well. For instance, The Rock knows you're the chairman and chief software architect of the Microsoft Corporation, a leading worldwide provider of software for the personal computer.
Thank you, Rock. I'm very flattered myself.
By creating Windows in 1983, a multitasking graphical user interface environment that runs on MS-DOS-based computers along with Windows NT and Windows 2000, completely self-contained operating systems that feature networking, symmetric multi-processing, multi-threading, and security. Bill, you've certainly revolutionized the technology we know today. I mean, The Rock doesn't impress easily, Bill, you know that, but I'm pretty damn impressed with what we're seeing here today. And considering that this Xbox at this moment is only running on one-fifth of the system's power, it's very impressive. Bill, do you have any idea what The Rock would be like if he were only running on one-fifth of his power?
Well, I would think that...
It doesn't matter what you think, Bill.
That right there is why The Rock gets the big money. He could tell the world's richest man, it doesn't matter what you think. Anyway, I won't play any more of this. It's always painful, these corporate things. I don't know why anybody thinks this is a good idea to bring in. Some big
I think there
the
are probably a few million very good ideas that The Rock agreed to do that for.
So happy 20th to Xbox. You still can't. I'm stunned that you
still
could
get
a Series
them.
X.
I had to resort to. Do you know what? I had to.
Did you sell?
It up and
did you sell
eBay.
Yourself sexually to get this?
I did. It came close. It came close. Sadly, nobody that I knew that had an Xbox Series X was interested in me.
You tried.
So yeah.
Was it
so
part
it was
of the sale
like,
of your
was...
company? Like that was part of the company?
Yeah. DMG, I want $40 million and an Xbox Series X.
And an Xbox Series X. No, well, sorry, we can't do the Series X.
Exactly. Exactly.
Impossible.
Impossible.
No, I went to eBay and paid the scalper's tax, but I had to do it.
Shame on you. How much did you have to pay?
Needed.
How much?
So I think over here they retail for $499.
Yeah.
And I paid $629, I think.
That's not bad.
It's not bad to have one now because I had to have Forza. Almost everyone that I know is playing
People
Forza,
are raving so, over this new Forza. It's the hottest game out right
it's,
now.
Do you know what's really interesting about it is it's the first thing that I've seen that has done what I call non-contemporaneous multiplayer. And I don't know whether that's a real phrase or whether I'm just making that up.
That's all right. It's yours now, baby. You own it.
But I love the fact that, you know, I don't often have time to go online and actually play at like a scheduled time with my friends, you know, actually like keeping a work, you know, we've all work schedules and families, and it's impossible to get online and actually play at the same time. But as I'm racing around on my own, it keeps pushing you like other people's records and your friends.
Oh, you have like ghost cars that you can follow.
Yeah.
That kind of
so
thing.
As I'm, so I'll be driving a bit of road, and it'd be like, "Hey, do you know your friend drove this bit of road like 10 seconds quicker
That's
than
annoying.
You just did?" And you're like,
"That's so
well,
annoying.
Screw that guy! I'm turning around and driving it straight back again, and I'm going to do it 10 seconds faster than him." And so you end up with a really interesting like competitive multiplayer where you actually don't have
That's
to be online
idea.
To play at the same time
That's
as the
cool.
other guys.
Yeah.
It's really nice. And in a world of, you know, not to get too macro or depressing, but in a sort of COVID world where you probably don't see your friends quite as much as you'd like to, it's a nice little bit of extra connection.
Well, yeah, and you're late in your, you know, kind of lonely, sweat-filled box. You know, you get to pretend
in
you
my
have
lonely
friends.
Single,
it's good.
You're in isolated
single
existence.
Hovel. Yeah, I've got friends.
Yeah, exactly.
Look, I can see them beating me on the screen.
I can see them ghosting. I mean, literally, it's a whole new definition of being ghosted.
No, I think that's great. I wish I could get a Series X. I've been trying since it came out. And actually, now Microsoft's saying 2023, probably, before this supply chain nightmare ends. Happy anniversary. 20 years for Xbox. How about you, Wesley? Was there a story I missed that you wanted to talk about?
Yes. I logged on to my Twitter Blue and went into stories.
Oh, you're Twitter Blue, are you?
My top articles. And I saw Facebook's race-blind policies around hate speech came at the expense of black users' new documents show.
How could that be?
And the reason why I'm pointing this one out specifically is because there was another story on the rundown about their glove where you can touch the metaverse.
Yeah.
This really shows how they're not putting people first in anything they approach. The type of arguments that they expose is in the boardroom about, oh, well, if we actually made things equitable for people who are marginalized, our conservative groups will get angry because we will have to start flagging some of the stuff that they post. And so it's kind of like shown that it's really like in the company.
Their motto shouldn't be move fast and break things. It should be simply profits over anything else. Anything
exactly.
else that might get in the way. This is the story, Elizabeth Dwoskin from The Washington Post. Facebook's race-blind policies around hate speech came at the expense of black users. New documents show researchers proposed a fix to the biased algorithm, but one internal document predicted pushback from conservative partners.
And I think there were even some stories in there that some of the people specifically tasked with working on this internally at Facebook had documents withheld from them to prevent them sort of sounding off or doing anything about it, which is not a great look when you're withholding research from your own employees.
But it's on brand.
It's on brand. Can't deny that.
And so when they came up with this glove for Meta, to go back to that story, if Facebook really listened to all the outcry, the first thing they would say about the glove is, this is what we're doing for privacy protection. This is what we're doing to make sure that the use of the glove won't adversely hurt health. Or this is what we're doing to make sure that it enriches lives. They don't do that. They're still talking about how cool it is to fill a plate or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's not in their DNA to have a people's first approach to technology.
And in Meta, everyone's black. How about that? What if we just do that? Make everybody black.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. By the way, I'm not wearing this glove. I don't care what they say. That is horrific.
That is bad.
And Metaverse glove, where are you?
That's the power
glove. It
looks
like glove. The Thanos glove, doesn't it?
It
it's
does.
Kind of like you can expect to sort of put some in and sort of used with the same sort of maliciousness.
Snap your fingers and half the world's gone. Mm-hmm. Okay, good pick. Thank you, Wesley. Your turn, Chris. Anything I missed in the rundown? There were a lot of good stories, or not in the rundown for that matter.
Oh, there's always a lot of good stories. But I found one that's not as razzle-dazzle as The Rock or quite as kind of controversial as Facebook. But I came across a new company called Flyfin that just launched about a week ago, a little over a week ago. And, you know, we've got holidays coming up and we're spending lots of money and on Black Friday and Black Month. We're going to have to eventually look at our taxes at the end of the year. And this is not as exciting as those other stories, but it's important. Flyfin offers is an AI-based tax app that's aimed at freelancers and gig workers mostly, but anybody can use it. And what it does is it's in the background working all the time for whenever you do a financial transaction of any kind.
Oh.
It keeps track of all your tax liability, all your tax credits. And it's spinning around. It's always working for you. And you can start it right away and get caught up. It'll go back into the past year.
So it's like Mint or something. You link your accounts in and then it goes through all of those. Interesting.
Yes, it does. And then at the end of the year, ostensibly, you push a button and everything's totaled up. And then you have time to use one of their actual humanoid or humans to help you to be sure that everything lines up correctly and is legal, and then there's no problems with your return. But you can have your return done, theoretically.
On January 1st, it says. Wow.
January 1st.
Wow.
And so the idea of having this always running in the background, I love that idea.
For
I think
freelancers.
A lot of people.
See, I have Lisa, so I don't have. She's watching every penny I spend.
Okay, you got a person.
I have real intelligence, not artificial. But what's really, you're right. It's very interesting because, it's a statement about our tax policy in this country that it's so complicated that you need artificial intelligence to figure out to maximize your deductions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you, in England, do you, will have to, does England, I know there's some countries where you get a postcard saying, we think your tax is this, okay? Do you have to go through the same rigmarole with Inland Revenue that we have to go in the U.S.?
It's almost for 95% of the population, I would say it's incredibly simplified. So your tax just comes off when you get your paycheck at the end of the month, and
then
you never
that.
Have to fill out a tax form in your life. There are a small percentage of people. So, for example, if you're a company director or if you're self-employed, you will have to fill out a form. But in each case, Generally, the government will lead you through a form pretty simply. It's all completable online. You don't need any third-party software.
That's another scandal in this country because...
I mean, the fact that... is it Intuit that has
they
a
lobbied
monopoly?
Yeah, they hide the free form, and they lobbied for a long time to keep the U.S. government from offering free filing because they make so much money on TurboTax.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So it's really I'm not going to say that if you have to fill a tax return out in the UK, you know, it's not trivial, but it also, you know, you don't require artificial intelligence to do it. I mean, chances are if you're clever enough to be running your own business as a freelancer, you can manage to do your own tax without AI. But for 95% of the population, you've never got to touch it. It's one of the few things that we get right.
Yeah. In Portugal, iFill says we have automated taxes. A lot of countries do this. You just confirm the value. You said, that's right, and you're done. You can dispute it if you want, but because it's all done automatically, it's almost always exact.
If only we could be so automated here in the States. Boy, I'll tell you.
Wow. Good. All three of you came up with good stories. Thank you. And saved me a lot of sifting through.
That's why we're the talent, Leo.
You're the talent. I'm just the guy doing the ads. Basically, that's my job. Thank you all for being here. Chris, it's great to meet you. I feel like we must have crossed paths so many times, both working for Ziff Davis and all of that. But it's nice to have somebody with equal longevity in the industry to join.
Equal gray hair.
Yeah, and, that too. Yeah. Contributing writer and editor at ZDNet, at EditingWiz on Twitter. Anything you want to plug?
Plug?
Yeah, you get to plug stuff now.
Well, I just plugged one of my stories, but
That's good.
I enjoy working with the both publications I work with, VentureBeat and ZDNet, and I'm having a lot of fun with it. It's the first time I've been a freelancer since about 98 or 99. So
that's why you're interested in this fintechs. Now I get it. Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah, you got to figure this out. Yeah,
I do.
My son is a TikTok influencer. Who knew? And he's starting to make some money. And I'm thinking, oh boy, I'm going to send him a link to this because
check it out.
Yeah, that's the hardest thing is you got to put money aside every paycheck because Uncle Sam's not doing it for you.
That's right.
Boss isn't doing it for you. Nice to meet you, Chris. Come back soon. Okay. We'll have you on again soon.
Sure.
The voice of the Stanford Cardinal, ladies and gentlemen. Chris Primesberger. Great to have you. Wes, Wesley, great to see you. Wesley Faulkner. What? Where? Who do you work for again? A little plug for Single Store, singlestore.com, where he is the head of community. Anything else you'd like to mention?
Yes. Speaking of Single Store, we have a Twitter account. We have a main one, Single Store DB for the main one. But the one that is under my care is Single Store Devs. We are running a contest. If you're listening to this in the month of November, we're giving away a MacBook Air, five pairs of iPod Pros, and some Pluralsight courses. So all you have to do is follow the account and retweet to enter. And if you look at the total count, you can see that the pool of people who can enter, you have a very, very good chance of winning. So go to Single Store Devs on Twitter and follow.
I take it I'm retweet. Not eligible, right?
Yeah. Yes, you are. Just all you have to do is the pinned tweet at the very top is the one that you need to follow and retweet. And you have a really good chance of winning a brand new computer. No need to go to any Black Friday deals. You can just go ahead and get one for free.
What's the Twitter handle?
Single Store Devs.
Single Store
Devs, the plural.
Devs for Single Store developers. All data, one platform. The pinned tweet tells it all. The November giveaway. That's nice. It's nice to give away stuff. That's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a brand new handle, so we're really trying to get more people to join, and hopefully this is the carrot that helped people to
just follow them and retweet.
The threshold.
That's all you have to do. Mm-hmm. That's it. Follow and retweet. Thank you, Wesley. It's great to see you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Will Harris, my old friend. Decades together talking about tech. Congratulations on yet another successful exit of your startup and tail, now part of the DMG group. NewScientist.com/podcasts. One of the things Will's been working on at WIL Harris, 1L Harris on the Twitter. Anything you would like to plug besides all of that?
Always 1L. Leo, did I ever even tell you? So it's always been 1L Will because, you know, you used to play video games, the old Street Fighter 2 or whatever, back in the arcades.
Yeah.
You only ever get three letters to put your high score in.
Oh.
And I have two middle names, so I have four initials. So I could never do it.
Is that why it's W-I-L?
So that's why it's W-I-L, because I was just the first three letters.
Oh, that's hysterical. And that's why it's Leo, not Leopoldo.
Leopoldo.
It's absolute samesies.
Yep, samesies.
We're contraction brothers.
Yeah, if you just go to the Chuck E. Cheese on Capitol Expressway in San Jose, that top score on Battle Zone should still be L-E-O.
Exactly. Right. Well, the same for me in Street Fighter 2 in some very random arcade in a dingy bit of Wales. So, follow me up on at Will Harris. And thanks, as always, for having me. It's it's a solid 1 a.m. here. I'm looking forward to
go to bed.
A good night's rest.
A little glass of brandy wouldn't hurt. Thank you,
Will. Oh, yes.
Great to see you. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Wesley. Sure. What a great panel. Always fun to get together with new and old friends and talk about tech. We do a twit on Sunday afternoons around 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern, 22:30 UTC, because, yes, finally, we finally followed the rest of the world and set our clocks back an hour. 22:30 is the starting time. And I mention that because you can watch us record the show. Most people watch on demand, but if you would like to watch live, tune in at that time. Go to twit. Actually, live.twit.tv is the website, and that'll give you a chance to choose between live audio or video of the show. People who watch live often like to chat live. There are two places you can do that, irc.twit.tv, open to all. And, of course, our fabulous Club Twit members, they have access to a Discord server, which has been really fun. I think the surprise benefit of Club Twit membership is the chance to interact with all of our hosts. We had a book group on Friday with Stacy. I had to fill an overflow room. So many people joined. Thank you. That went so well. And I presume that's going to be on the Twit Plus feed, right? That's a special. It already is. That's a special fee for Club Twit members. The final benefit, we thought it was going to be the primary benefit, ad-free versions of all the shows. But the Discord's great. The Twit Plus feed has lots of extra stuff that doesn't make it to the podcast. And all of that, $7 a month, go to twit.tv/clubtwit if you'd like to find out more. This would be a good time to sign up because I have a feeling there's some great events coming up in the near future. Let's see what else. On-demand versions of the show, all of our shows, are still available for free, you know, ad supported at the website, twit.tv. You can go to twit.tv and download this show or any of our shows. You could also go to the YouTube channels. Each show has its own YouTube channel. I think it's youtube.com/thisweekintech. YouTube.com/twit is another place you could go to get Twit bits, little stuff, and also links to all of the YouTube channels. Finally, probably the best way to get it, subscribe to Twit in your favorite podcast player. If you search for Twit, you'll find all of our shows. And if you do me a favor, if your podcast player allows for reviews, as many do, leave us a 5-star review. I know we've been around since 2005, but there's still some people, youngins, who've never heard of Twit. Let them know what a great show it is. We always have so much fun. Mm-hmm. Thank you all for being here, and we will see you next time. Another Twit is in the can. Bye-bye.